You're listening to episode 12-7 of the Take Aiming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me tonight is no other than a resident fighting game fanatic. I'm talking about Eric Blue Swim.
I'm trying to think of something really quickly that is not, hey, that's me. And I'm coming up with nothing.
He's going to talk about some Guilty Gear Vita impressions, right?
Damn right.
Okay, that's what I'm looking forward to. We also have Jeremy Lawman Lamont, who is poised to offer lavish praise on at least two Japanese hardware manufacturers.
Hey, that's me.
Is that a contractual obligation?
I don't know. It is now.
It is, okay. Also here tonight, Sage Samurage Morse Green. Sector, put your hands together. She's back. She's angry. She's here.
Although, Sector, please forgive me because I'm only going to be here for like 20 minutes and then I have to go finish a final. But next time, you should listen because I'm going to have amazing impressions on like five different games. So
amazing.
Amazing.
Tonight, nothing, but next time.
Tonight, nothing, but next time, extra buku.
20 minutes of silence.
I have a headache, dear.
Also here tonight is Ryan Linus Twice making his podcast premiere.
Hello, I am Linus Twice.
Explain your handle, please, Ryan.
It is actually completely, there is no history behind it. I was looking at a painting of Tom York from Radiohead that a friend of mine had done, and it just popped into my head. The strangest thing.
When was that happened?
Oh, it had to be more than 3 years ago.
You should just make something up. You should just be like, you know what? It's a full-on Peanuts reference.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. It's a reference. My blanket was actually named Linus when I was a child. Something like that. Something inspiring, you know, when I grew up in, you know, the war zone overseas.
Or you had a friend named Linus who you had to kill because he went crazy and then he came back from the dead, so you had to kill him again.
Or that you knew somebody named Linus that was the Siamese twin, so it was Linus Linus.
Well, there is a world of Linus references out there. Just pick one. Listener, pick one. Pick your favorite one. That's the story.
Yes. And because we're on a limited timetable tonight, let's hear from Sage. She's going to offer some impressions.
No.
No. Okay, no. Let's move on.
Good night, everyone. Yes.
Sorry, Sector. Show.
That's it. That's a wrap.
No, I have nothing for you right now because I'm going to do an infinite to original Bioshock comparison next time and some indie games and maybe Fez, but not tonight.
You should take a little bit of extra time and include Bioshock 2, my favorite of the series.
No, because it's like toilet paper and it doesn't belong in the comparison at all.
Oh my god.
Toilet paper is actually pretty useful.
Shut up. Okay, it's like the... Whatever. I'll come up with a better reference next week.
That'll get the comments.
So let me take the helm then. Let me talk about a franchise that I've loved and I don't believe I've devoted any time to on the podcast or in written form. And I'm talking about Trackmania. One word. One great concept. The original was released probably back in 2004 here in the United States, and I don't claim to be the first to jump on the bandwagon. I did start reading reviewers praise the game, and they compared it, I remember, to the sheer exhilaration of being a six-year-old and opening your first Hot Wheel track set for Christmas. And you guys know I love some construction sets, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
I have heard it said.
Yes, and Trackmania was built around the play, create, share principle long before Sony came on board. So a few years ago, developer Nadio did the unthinkable, and they released...
Nadio!
They released Trackmania Nations for free. And although it only had one venue and it had some ads in the stadium to offset the cost of production, it really remains, in my opinion, one of the best freeware games of all time. So they hit that high point, and then after that, they started losing their way. They announced the competitive first-person shooter and RPG creator at E3, which showed promise, but I was kind of worried this wasn't their forte. For Trackmania 2, they splintered the game into Canyon Valley and Stadium venues. And to complicate things, when you pre-purchased the game, you were given access to a very robust, it felt almost finished beta. And then to complicate things further, Canyon was released on Steam the same day as the Stadium beta. So a lot of different things. Long story short, I got confused. I bought Stadium as a pre-order. And as soon as I purchased it, I began playing the game. I've yet to see the word beta among anywhere in the game. The one thing I've noticed is that the simple track editor, there's an advanced and a simple track editor, the simple one is missing. So if you are confused yet, I think you follow Trackmania's community. There was about a million people playing Nations, and now there's about a tenth of that. But I'm just picking on kind of loopy publishing here. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. How's the game? It's essentially a remake of Nations, this time with really gorgeous graphics. It's got day-night cycles, which are kind of throwaway, but just a fidelity resolution that can make any PC gamer cry. The core concept of the game, still the same, a single-player game that pits you against a series of tracks, and each race you try to beat a preset time, and that earns you either a bronze, silver, or gold medal. And the game is really designed for obsessives like myself who just analyze each track and go over their play style in hopes of shaving a few hundredths of a second off their completion time. The physics are deliberately simplified. Do things like you take an F1 through a dirt stadium course, which is kind of fun. The real challenge comes from landing jumps. Navigating can be challenging, but when you have a very limited amount of control, when your vehicle is airborne, you really need to set up each jump almost perfect. You factor in loops, you factor in forgetting the name, like embankments, and you'll be repeating segments over and over in hopes of beating your ghost. For multiplayer, there's the ghosts of other vehicles. No collisions are to be found, keeping with that. Right now, it's selling for $8.99 as a pre-order. I guess when the full one comes out, it just says May. This month is supposed to be out, the full version. It'll go up to $10. A little confusing what's beta, what's not, but definitely a lot of fun. Have you guys played any of the Trackmania games, or are you missing out?
I played the DS one.
How was that?
You know, that was the first Trackmania game I ever really tried, and it did not quite click with me, and I'm not sure if it's just because, you know, the DS wasn't exactly a powerhouse as far as hardware goes, but just talking about it actually kind of makes me want to pull it out and give it another shot.
Yeah, I played a little bit of the Wii version, and it was good, serviceable.
I think that was released around the same time, wasn't it?
It was, I just remember it was delayed about a year, and I forgot who the publisher was. It was a fairly small publisher, and by the time it actually came out, no one noticed it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sold about 8,000 copies here in the United States. Jeremy, Sage, any take?
You know, I want to say I played one about 10 or 15 years ago or something like that, but it just kept making me want to play Mario's Missing. Or no, I'm sorry, not Mario's Missing. What? Luigi's Mansion. Not yet.
What? Oh, Jeremy, God, the payoff didn't come quick enough.
No, I haven't played.
I just wanted to make sure, because I didn't. Nobody was laughing hard enough the last time. I just wanted to make sure I was very clear about that joke.
See, it wasn't very funny was the problem, Jeremy.
Shh!
I will not.
Nadio.
Keep saying it until they laugh. Let me move on.
Luigi. Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna leave right now.
She's walking out sector. I'm sorry. So a couple of years ago, I went to the Anime Expo. I spotted a table. No DVDs, no manga, no wall scrolls, no figurines, and no hentai.
What?
So I asked these guys, what the hell are you doing here? And there were three likable guys eager to share their dream, which was in their intent to build the world's first working combat-ready mech. And naturally, I listened and discovered, you know, these were some great guys. They were moonlighting from their jobs as military contractors. Their enthusiasm sucked me in. And about 10 minutes later, I started realizing the cost of actually building such a unit, and I realized that these guys were in fact crackpots.
Your wallet was about $10,000.
Took you that long, huh?
Yeah, I'm slow that way. I'm gullible. Anyway, my dream of becoming a mech pilot remained. And so for the low, low price of $12, including, I think it was free Amazon Prime shipping, my dreams were both realized and squashed violently. This week I got around to playing Steel Battalion Heavy. So,
prepare yourself. Connect
version? I'm sorry?
The Connect version?
Yes, the
Xbox 360? Yes.
So,
that doesn't have any regular controls, does it?
But how can you bear...
No, it does. Now, if you remember the game's concept, it's lofty. You use a combination of regular stick control. You turn and you fire with your standard 360 controller. And you use gestures perceived by the Kinect. And you can see the ambition in the game. But unfortunately, Microsoft's peripheral really ruins the experience and makes me hate my Kinect even.
Well, there's a surprise.
Yes. Well, you see, most everything you do with the controller feels fine. You press the button, the trigger to shoot, it shoots. You move the stick and your mech shuffles along, at a pretty good clip. But things fall apart with the gestures. At the beginning of the game, there's a story kind of element and, the big broad movements, like standing up to look, you look out the hatch, so you stand up out of your chair. That works. The big movements are fine. The story has you do things like, you shake hands, you issue a fist bump, or you salute. Those tend to work. Don't snap your salute, and you'll find it works. The minor ones don't. So on each side of the cockpit, there's these stowable kind of pull-out machines, and just getting to these are a pain in the ass. You want to pull one out, and as soon as you lift up your hand, there's an on-screen hand, but you're apt to press something else. If you want to switch ammo, you don't get to press a button on your controller, which is kind of weird because the original, as we all know, Steel Battalion was, that controller that had, half a billion buttons on there. But instead, you reach out to touch a panel. And unfortunately, reaching out to, say, change a weapon closes the porthole. So expect a lot of frustration on the battlefield. In essence, I think Steel Battalion shows just how Kinect has failed. Now, this is by From Software, who's continually proven themselves capable of creating some really interesting experiences. And they took what I think was a marginally successful game, they spliced in Kinect controls. And because of the inaccuracy, they had to drop the enemy AI to really moronic levels. And so they give you a game that's just frustrating on multiple levels. And although, the Kinect helped make Microsoft a small fortune, I think, at least for me, there was a loss in faith. I know when I'll be attending the presser next month, I'll be a bit skeptical. Because I think of the promised functionality of things like Milo interacting with people, reading your drawings. I think about Spielberg's speech.
Drawings
about the revolution. All these things that never happened. Instead, we got a bunch of casual sports games and basically speech recognition and several clunkers like Steel Battalion, which I had to stop playing the game because I just got too frustrated. So That ends my career as a mech pilot, shot down in flames. I quit the mech pilot school about halfway through.
Wait, you quit Steel Battalion? Yes. Or you quit? Or you quit all mechs ever? Because Hawkins
Still
great.
I can't quit all mechs.
Okay. I was about to have a heart attack.
That's crazy talk, Sage.
Okay, good.
Steel Battalion, I'm going to... I'll probably keep it, but never...
What about old Steel Battalion?
That's fine, I don't own it. Is it backwards compatible? If I ever saw the entire setup and it looked like in good condition, I'd pick it up in a
heartbeat. Same here. I've been wanting to get it, actually.
I guess it might not be backwards compatible because you have to be able to plug in the... Because we have it here, but I guess I just realized I'm going to have to find an original Xbox to hook it all into.
Yeah, that's for me.
Yeah.
So did I understand you correctly that this uses a mix of controller and Kinect?
Absolutely.
Or is it all Kinect?
Okay. No, what you heard, Jeremy, is that it tries to, but it fails. That's what you're
saying. Right. Well, I also have a question about one specific gesture, because I heard that the worst of all of these things, you said right at the beginning, you're like, oh yeah, this works. The part where you get up and look out the hatch of your Mac, I heard that you have to do like a binoculars motion with your hand.
There's two different things. One, you stand up to do the porthole, and then another, you take your left hand and you kind of almost make a salute motion. That works. And then, but the weird thing is you still have to hold your controller with one hand as you peer out and do a little bit of recon.
And then I heard that you have to make like a masturbatory hand motion with your other hand and then flip the screen off with your foot. I mean, that's where I think the complexity really comes in.
Is that the middle toe up?
I
don't have the dexterity.
Nobody does. That's why it's a failure of a game.
There we go.
Is there any voice recognition?
No.
Like, can you like grab yourself like Michael Jackson and go whoo?
No, well, you can. I don't. You probably won't do anything.
A skeleton on screen of yourself, like you see your shoulders and your hands, and anytime you have a little itch on your nose, it brings up the hand. And
wait, but as a skeleton, you have no flesh.
It just maps your shoulder blades, and it maps your arms, and you see your hands as kind of red dots.
Shoulder blade?
Yeah, maps those. You see a skeleton of yourself on
with no skin. Are you the undead?
Well, it's just a wire.
The undead Michael Jackson.
It's just a wire drawing. A lot of the Kinect games do that.
Robert, I'm teasing the game.
Okay. That would be a little bit more interesting, huh? The Grim Fandango riff.
Yeah, or like you're the one escapee from the Army of Darkness, and now you're in the future and you're piloting a mech. That would be a great plot point.
Right. Well, see, then you can integrate the Kinect as some sort of peripheral that you're wearing as punishment, and you have to overcome its clumsy controls in order to break out of this imprisonment.
I actually heard
the Kinect has really jaded me.
Yeah.
I didn't buy into all of it, but I really expected it to offer at least one or two incredible experiences, and so far, almost nothing.
You know what's funny? I heard, this is kind of semi-related to this, I heard that there was a couple of people over at UCLA, they're doing a student game called The Perfect Woman. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but what they said was they were doing some experimentation with Kinect, and they basically decided that, you know what, Kinect is basically good for just about nothing, but they decided to try something anyway. So they made this game, and it's sort of like a WarioWare sort of quick cuts of, I mean, it may not be that quick, but it's a bunch of mini games, and the whole premise of this game, The Perfect Woman, is that you are, it's a little bit like in Fallout, where you sort of indirectly customize your character by choosing, you know, this is the gender of your father, or, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know. Yeah, I know.
It's the 2010s.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. It's the future past. But the whole idea, the whole premise of this game, The Perfect Woman, is they do these mini games, but they base the game entirely on like the inaccuracy and the really general wonkiness of the Kinect. And so the game is all about like trying to overcome that. And I just find that concept just super interesting. It's not out yet. I think they're going to be releasing it a little bit later this year, and I'm assuming it's going to be an Xbox Live indie game. But I just saw that, and I thought that was really
interesting. Is Microsoft co-financing this
project? I don't know, because they were pretty candid about it. They literally said, yeah, Kinect is good for pretty much nothing.
They should go for a whole route of, for all you super nerds out there, we've got a whole line of awkward games coming out to help you overcome your deficiencies, like awkward motor skills, awkward dating, awkward, and it's just the every single game is overcoming your awkwardness in that area.
Awkward first sexual experience.
Like, they could train you, like, every...
Faster.
You would have to double amplify everything that you did. They could have, like, awkward kung fu lessons where you would have to, like, really over-accentuate everything.
Right, so and then as you get better, it like, decreases the amount of... Up until the point where the Kinect actually can't be any better, but it decreases the amount of handicap until you finally, you know, get to the last level, and then it's like, oh, this is the least awkward the Kinect could be, and you made it this far. Congratulations.
Got it figured out.
So we should tell Microsoft at the press event, Robert, that that's the route they should really be taking.
Well, the rumor is Kinect 2 in Xbox Next.
I'm going to laugh out loud and then throw anything in my hand at them if they release another piece of trash like
I'm
the
bringing
Kinect.
A brick and putting it in your hand.
Can we bring someone else's camera lens like last year's Nintendo? Can we take a camera lens and throw it?
That was before the show even started. Some guy dropped a $1,000 camera and asked us to pick it up. The glass shatter.
Yeah, it was
best,
really.
Oh, best part everything. Of the Kinect 2 reveal: the pause yeah. for the applause.
And then
it's no- Kinect 2. Crickets, and maybe a loud "fuck you" from the back of the auditorium,
the back of the house.
Everything is gamer. More better with Kinect.
And then off screen, they hold up real guns and they go clap, god damn you, and we're like, yay, Kinect 2.
I don't know. I think they'll definitely stick with Kinect, but I mean, how yeah, can they not?
I mean, it's they've hitched their cord to that horse and they're just gonna ride it right off the cliff.
Even the PS4 has a Kinect now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Have you seen the Illumina Room technology that they're talking about for the next Xbox?
Uh-uh. That does look pretty damn neat, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing I've ever seen. It maps your game beyond your screen to the things around your screen, and sort of, I don't know, it's very intense to watch. Especially, I was very impressed with the ones that didn't involve the game at all. They were just sort of like a moving grid that gave you spatial awareness without distracting from what was happening on the screen. I was actually pretty impressed with that.
That stuff is really cool, but they didn't invent that. Like, everything else that they put out that's decent, they stole that from... I forget who it is that invented it, but there were ads for that whole room mapping thing, like, 3 years ago, that technology.
I'm pretty sure that was actually Sony, wasn't it? Was doing research into mapping entire rooms.
I think it was kids at one of those, you know, like MIT or something, and then all the companies showed up and they were like, give us your shit.
Yep.
Does that mean we have to hide our Sailor Moon body pillows?
No, Robert, they don't want those. They want things that haven't been used to death already.
Oh.
On that note,
$150 worth of pillows sitting on my bed.
That's not the only thing you're getting.
Back to awkward.
Blue,
what do you got for me?
Well, I got in Guilty Gear XX Accent Core Plus R.
That title's awkward.
For the PlayStation Vita over the weekend.
Can I ask a question real quick before you get started?
By all means.
Yeah, why is the gear so guilty?
That's a good question. It's kind of like asking, why is the Blaze blue?
Wow. That's actually really profound.
That was really deep. A
little bit of trivia. Blaze Blue is actually the name of Ragna the Blood Edge, the main character, whatever, his gauntlet. Yeah. That is one thing that has really never been too well spoken out out in public. But that is apparently the origins of the name Blaze Blue, because it's such a stupid name. Everybody's like, man, where the hell did that come from? But it's... But yeah. Anyways,
I always thought what was it, BlazBluey? The
oh yes,
and I thought that was a really bad name.
I think the sequel's actually getting localized.
Mm, interesting.
The 3DS, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is it maybe 3DS eShop? Maybe.
Yep.
But with Guilty Gear XX Accent Core Plus R, I'm just going to call it Plus R from now.
No. I say you should say the full title every time.
This is going to be a 3-hour podcast.
So let it be written, so let it be done. Continue.
Yeah, basically, it's the latest, you know, balance, patch, update for Accent Core Plus, which Robert, you and I reviewed back in March.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of the content from what I've seen so far, you know, I'm still playing, and I've put about 2 or 3 hours into it. The vast majority is stuff that was already in the PSN XBLA version. But the big kicker, and I think it's probably going to torpedo the interest for a lot of people, is that it does not have online play. Mm. Yeah, and this is the, I believe it's the, as far as traditional fighters go, whatever. This is the sixth game on the Vita that's, you know, a traditional fighting game. That's not factoring in the PSP backwards compatible titles and what have you. And it's basically the last to market. It's, you know, 4:3, you know, has borders on the side, you know, screen.
Port.
Yeah, and...
Local, at least?
Huh?
Local?
Yeah, it does have ad hoc.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, being the last to mark with no online play, it's kind of making it a little harder to recommend. I mean, with, right, you know, with the console version, I mean, it's one thing. It's like fighting games are traditionally played on consoles. So when something gets ported over to a handheld, you have to be a little bit more, a little bit more picky, because the market's not really that huge. You know, I mean, most tournament fighting game players play on consoles. They don't train on handhelds that much. And with the market being as saturated as it is on the Vita, you know, I mean, there's, you know, five other quality fighting games, more if you count.
And some with crossplay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's even at $15, it's a little hard to recommend. Plus, I mean, Blaze Blue Continuum Shift Extend is going to be a part of PS Plus later this month. And, I mean, honestly, Blaze Blue is better than Guilty Gear in almost every way possible. I mean, characters, stages, music, story, I mean, you name it. It's just, it's a more polished product all around, so it makes it kind of hard to recommend this version.
Is it how better than Guilty Gear XXX and Core Plus R?
Oh, that depends. Are we talking like nude mod DLC?
Oh God! How much is it selling for, Blue?
I believe it's selling for $15.
$15, yeah.
It's not bad if you're solely just going to be playing it offline, solo play, whatever.
But 4:3, that ratio. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's. Just that just really hurts.
Is it there at least an option to stretch it out?
Not that I've found. I think you can just choose one of
fat characters.
I think it's like three different borders and then just black on the sides. And it's just, you know, you have to have something there to make it feel like you're getting the most out of the screen, because if you're just playing like a 4:3 game on a widescreen, it just doesn't feel, you feel like you're doing it wrong, you know?
Yeah, especially on portable.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's the game itself is good, but I think they've really handcuffed themselves as far as, you know, long-term appeal of the game. There's just not a lot to do if you want to play multiplayer. And there's just so much on the platform that you can play, you know, online multiplayer with, that's quite frankly better than what Guilty Gear can offer. So it's
Guilty Gear XXX and Core Plus R.
Yes.
Hardcore.
But yeah, I mean, it's good, but I don't think it's going to rate as highly as the PSN XBLA version that you and I reviewed.
Jeremy, I was hoping for the plus or minus R DVD burning joke in there.
Actually, I was trying to load up those Moai statues saying, guilty, guilty, guilty. I could not.
Pretty much, aside from that, the only thing I've really been doing gaming-wise has been I've taken on a little bit of a project of taking out the tabs of my Nintendo 64 so I could play Virtual Pro Wrestling 64, the Japanese version of WCW versus NWO World Tour, because that has a shit ton more wrestlers in it, stuff based on, you know, New Japan and All Japan, all sorts of stuff that did not make it into the U.S. version of WCW versus NWO World Tour. So I was like,
wait, what is WCW versus, is that... So I was just complaining about American or about Japanese titles, but that's not much better, is it?
Not really, no. I mean, basically, this was the first wrestling game on the Nintendo 64. And it was the second game to use that No Mercy AKI Corporation engine. First being WCW versus the World on the original PlayStation.
WWF Rocket Tour Force Ultra Wrestling Championship Extend.
Crush Hour. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty convoluted title, but I mean, it's honestly one of my favorite wrestling games from the Nintendo 64 era, because you know, it had more of a Japanese pro wrestling as a sport feel as opposed to its sports entertainment feel of some of the later games.
I miss Saturday Night Slam Masters, by the way.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. I'm surprised that Capcom hasn't done anything with that franchise since.
Also miss the old PlayStation 1 WWF games, or like a fighting game put out by Midway. What were those?
Yeah, called? Yeah. Like WrestleMania, the arcade game.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been up to.
So you got a Japanese N64, and so you have to alter all of your cartridges. Am I understanding that right?
Well, actually...
you got them backwards. But
Yeah, basically, the Nintendo 64 is just like the Super Nintendo as far as region modding goes. They just use physical locking, right, which is basically preventing the cartridge from entering the cartridge slot and locking in.
So all you have to do is then just change the one cartridge that you want to play, the
it's
Japanese
like birth control. It's
a belt. Little bit.
Chastity belt cartridges.
Yeah,
it's more like a diaphragm. You're like,
I sure do. GBA might just come out of there.
All you have to do is take an X-Acto knife and just kind of heat it. I'm going to heat up it like an X-Acto knife and kind of slice away at it until I can kind of break it up, because there is not a lot of room to negotiate in that cartridge slot, so I got to be very careful.
I'm glad you specified cartridge slot, because I got confused if we were still talking about birth control.
Oh, God.
Dr. Stiles.
Get the shards of glass out of this liver. Get the wormy things out of the brain.
You know, that would be a really un-PC part of something like Trauma Center if one of the procedures you had to do was...
Oh, God.
Now I really want to make a non-PC version of Trauma Center, and it'll be all stuff like that.
Female circumcision. You know,
I was thinking abortions, Jesus Christ, but yeah, female circumcision.
Well, that's a lot better.
Well, redneck abortions take like a Hoover vacuum. Yep.
There's an element of choice involved usually with the one and not so much with the other. Usually.
Confession. I cannot play Trauma Center.
Because
I get the heebie-jeebies around like medical stuff, like operations and
it's hospitals. A cartoon.
Yeah. I know, but it gets me kind of heebie-jeebie-ish. Oh. But it actually, it's like kind of wears me out, and like the side of my head feels kind of weird, like weird and tingly. It just weirds me out.
Can you play Operation? Can you remove water on the knee without freaking out?
It depends. If I hit that Adam's buzzer, apple. I lose my shit. If I hit that buzzer, I lose my shit.
No, maybe that's game. Why you reverse can't play Pavlov. Maybe you like played Operation too much as a kid, and it like zapped your brain, and that's why your head tingles now when you play anything like that.
Do you start to smell burning electronics? Like, is it like a stroke?
I'm sorry, I don't know how we got into this. Is my fault. Let's not talk about this anymore.
Listeners, share your stroke stories, your video game stroke.
No, please don't. Please don't.
That has given you... No?
No, we don't want to know.
Okay.
Well, actually, you know, I mean...
Fap confessions.
You know, yes. Actually... If people shared their ideas for really awful, awful, offensive games, that's
no,
what...
No, we shouldn't do that. No, let's not do that.
Oh, God. Here it comes.
But I'll tell you, I used to get a headache whenever I played the original Bionic Commando.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but I don't know if it was the motion or the high con. Like, if you remember that game, there was a lot of green and red and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if something weird happened, but as soon as I would like actually get physically ill, I eventually grew out of it because I went back. I was always afraid to go back and play it, but I went back.
Can you watch like Akira, or do you have like an epileptic seizure?
I don't have any issues with anything. That was like the only game I ever had a problem with, and it's not like how people used to get sick with like Doom or Wolfenstein or something. They get, like, this.
People got sick with that?
Oh yeah, or motion sickness. Or Marathon, you know, the Halo.
That I heard. I didn't. Yeah, that I heard. I didn't know that people got sick over Wolfenstein. I mean,
just first person shooters. Just the aspect of.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I thought it was fake Hitler's head exploding made you sad, Jeremy.
Hey, new Wolfenstein got announced today. Is anyone excited about that?
Yes, Bethesda will be.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll be playing that.
Yeah.
Bethesda.
We will be playing it.
Yes.
Yay!
At least be seeing it. We have 2 hours to watch. An hour of presentations and an hour of playtime. Oh, I was like, can I skip the presentation and get to the playtime? Short answer, no.
Yeah, no.
Robert, don't offend them, okay? I actually want to go.
Sorry. Ryan, what you got for me?
I have been playing Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, as well as a little indie title called Don't Starve. Mm-hmm. First off, Blood Dragon, absolutely love it. I am a child of the Terminator films, Aliens, all of those. Michael Biehn is my hero. And I just think they did a really fantastic job representing that sort of, I don't know if I could call it proud... I don't think I'm proud of that era of American history, but I definitely like the referential humor to it, for sure.
So that wasn't very good, was it?
Blood Dragon?
Cinematic history or just history in general?
Oh, well, I mean, history in general. I mean, cinematic history, I think, is probably the worst of the two. I think that cinema
during... I kind of wonder, and you should, Ryan, tell us, you know how we get games now and they're like, oh, this is 8-bit, but it's actually like 16-bit? It's a lot better than it was back then. Or like, we're like, oh, yeah, this is like the 80s, but it's actually like... You know, because stuff back then, like, if you ever go back, and I'm pretty sure we've talked about this before on the show, but, like, if you ever go back and watch an episode of, like, Thundercats or something like that, and you're like, hell yeah, Thundercats, and you go back, and it's terrible.
Right.
Yep.
Or 3 horrible. Frames of, like, animation.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
yeah. And looped. Yeah.
Chitara sounds like a tuba or something.
Yeah. And, like, frame 2 has, like, the wrong colors for, like, the chest plate
yes,
or
the
something.
Legs or something, or, like, messed up, yeah.
Well, and in general, like, it just looks like...
That. This seems like it's kind of like the airbrushed version of the 80s. But that's not that it's bad. I'm just wondering if that's your impression of it.
Well, it's interesting because the cutscenes are really where the reference becomes just this golden blossom of amazingness. And they're done entirely... Like, when I watch the cutscenes for Blood Dragon, I feel like I'm sitting in my living room playing my Sega Genesis all over again, you know? Mm. I mean, just those awesome 16-bit cutscenes where, you know, nobody's limbs really move. They just sort of, their character models scoot across the screen uncomfortably as they're saying their lines. But, it, you know, and that coupled with the dialogue, which is all, you know, just like the comic books of the era, very, you know, profanity-laden and intensely violent, which, of course, we all love. So, you know, I mean, I got nothing but love for Blood Dragon, except for the Blood Dragons themselves in the game. They run around almost like retarded giraffes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're sort of touted as an integral mechanic in taking over the bases that you're trying to capture on the island. And it's just they're very clumsy creatures, and they don't attack very often, and they just sort of roar and then die a lot of the time.
So let's actually take this back just one step. So my understanding of Blood Dragon is that this is a total conversion of Far Cry 3, right?
No. The cutscenes themselves are all rendered as though it was a Genesis game, but the gameplay itself is just it's modded, you know.
Right, right. So it's basically
not even huge.
And a lot of neon, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. In fact, they make mention of that in the descriptions of one of the weapons, particularly the bow. They say that the bows, you may not think they are the future, but we added fucking neon because neon is the future. And that makes it okay. You know, it's just all of these sort of these excuses that they make for themselves and then rub them in your faces. I don't know. As a gamer, I love that. but everything there, if you played Far Cry 3 and you liked the gameplay and the graphics, of course, then I mean, you're gonna have a great time. Everything's right there where you left it, all of the up close kills.
Does it carry over where you're creating the different, like, what is it, like wallets for your money and all those little things that you craft?
Crafting is actually absent from the gameplay.
Okay.
Yeah, But, however, the weapon attachment system is much more balls out insane. And you don't unlock them by paying for them. You unlock them sort of as you progress through the story and complete side missions. You get them as rewards. But things as zany as the quad barrel shotgun, I thought, were absolutely hilarious.
Okay.
Has anybody else on played Blood Dragon yet, or is it...
I haven't yet, but I'm wondering how many bro fists out of 5 would you give it?
Bro fists out of 5. 12. I'd have to say 1 because it's a robot hand and it just crushes whatever you bro fist.
Wow.
And do a bloody pulp.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't get beyond 1. But if you could get beyond 1, I'd definitely say I'd give it a 4 out of 5. basically just because the name of the creature is in the title and the mechanics for the creature don't work super well. So that's just sort of a no-brainer.
I would love to see how Metacritic would aggregate, like, the 1 bro fist out of 5 because you couldn't get past 1 bro fist. I wonder what their
70%
intern math would be. Yeah, I know. They'd be like,
I think that's the fallback ratio.
They would figure it out.
7.
Yeah.
7 that shit.
Yeah. I feel like
that was an... Sorry, what?
No, go for it.
No, what? I didn't...
You interrupted yourself. What were you going to say?
Did I? Well, I thought, well, maybe my sound was slow. I was going to make a bad pun, but now it seems out of place because there's so much silence. So never mind.
But yeah, I mean, the great thing about Blood Dragon is it lets you be the video game character that you always wanted to be when you grew up. You get all the weapons, you get to be godlike, especially by the end of the game, and they give you all the attachments to do it. You know, I mean, you get to ride a Blood Dragon covered in, you know, exoskeletal armor with a minigun on top of it. I mean, it's it's just gamer heaven. Mm-hmm.
That kind of pops into my head, that picture that you see is like one of those like old timey art. Art pieces of dinosaurs with like laser cannons on. you guys ever see that one?
No, dude, there was a cartoon. What was that called? Like Dino something or other. Don't you guys remember that, where they would put like this robot armor on the dinosaurs?
Was it back in the 90s?
Didn't they do that
Are you talking about the one where it was the animals versus the dinosaurs and they were all Transformer robots?
No. Yeah, you're thinking of something. This is way before that. This is just a cartoon that was dedicated specifically. Like, these people went back in time to like the Land of the Lost or something, and they brought back dinosaurs, and then they decided they were going to fight with the dinosaurs, and so they put rocket launchers on them. There were toys, man. They had like dinosaurs that would march, and they'd have like little spring loaded rocket launchers on them.
Wind up motors for like walking legs. Crap! It begins with a Z, doesn't it? Or am I thinking of something different?
I don't know. We should look it up, I think. But
I know that there was...
Like, I mean, that's the kind of vibe this game is trying to capture, right? Dino Riders. Dino Riders. And it was... Oh, my God. I'm looking it up right now. This is amazing. A peaceful race that lived in harmony until the evil Rulons came and attacked them.
Of course.
This is awesome. They have all these Dino Riders. Oh, my God. Anyway, it seems to me like that is sort of the element that this game is trying to capture, is that sort of thing where, I mean, it is basically an unapologetic 80s, you know, aesthetic, but it's amped up. That's what I was saying before. So it's not really like the 80s. It's like we now imagine the 80s to have been.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because when you do play it, I mean... Absolutely, it's got all the gorgeous graphics of the current gen and everything like that. But I mean, really, it's just celebrating them in a sensor environment where they can actually do that, mm-hmm. where they can actually go beyond. You know, they actually have the ability to depict the violence that was depicted in those video games, just not as well, so it wasn't communicated. You know, but now they actually
get golden axe tail sweep.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean the references abound to movies, video games, comic books, everything. I mean, if you grew up in the time, chances are you're going to find something to identify with about the game, which is great.
I'm not sure if I will really is there a demo available for this on consoles?
There is.
Maybe I should try the demo. Because the thing is, here's the weird thing about me. I'm not a prude or anything, but I was really turned off, for example, like by Bulletstorm. Mm-hmm. I never heard a bad thing about Bulletstorm. People constantly, like, without exception, love Bulletstorm. Like, it has great mechanics, awesome mm-hmm. scoring system. Mm-hmm. But the Dick Tits thing, I just could not get past that. And I never... No, for serious. Like, I'm like, oh, it's just another dumb... you know, meathead game. And so on one hand, I'm like, yeah, 80s, like, yeah, neon. But if it's all, you know, if it's like, oh, fucking, you know, badass robot, like, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, but couldn't you have done it without? Like, I'm just looking at Dino Riders images right now, and it's awesome without, you know, if you are hearing my voice right now and you're sitting at a computer, pull up on your web browser of choice, pull up Dino Riders.
Opera.
And look at this stuff. Yeah, Opera, the Oprah.
Internet Explorer. Browser.
Netscape.
Yes. Yeah. Mozilla.
Will it come up on America Online? That's what I'm using right now.
The DS, plug in your DS web browser cartridge.
Oracle.
Yeah, get on your Dreamcast.
I used to use that browser too.
I was actually at a plan trade this week and I saw that, and I'm like, wow, that is a piece of history right there. I almost bought it just for the...
What was the game that came on that disc?
Oh, man. Oh.
That should be a trivia question.
Yeah, that should be. I don't know.
Crap, I got it around here somewhere. I need to dig it out. Jesus, that thing was a bitch to set up.
Overall, Sounds like Blood Dragon, pretty fun. Yeah,
absolutely. It's fun. It's not too cerebral. It's not gonna make you think too hard. But you know, sometimes you need that. And it's only $15. I mean, you don't even need Far Cry 3 to play it.
Yes, I was hoping you were gonna mention that. Awesome.
Yeah.
It does take up a lot of gig though. Like it's what, a 13 gig game.
Whoa.
Oh, no. It's 1.7 gigs max. It's like 1,700 megabytes, I think. Yeah, because you have to download the full game in order to play the demo, and then it works where you just sort of unlock the full game from the demo.
Sage just likes to make 2,000 saves.
No. That's true, actually, but no. How did you know, Robert?
Fridge is full.
Okay, I had heard that, and I hadn't actually double-checked on it, so I'm glad to hear that that's not true, because if you have a 360 and you don't have one of the, or even if you do have one of the bigger hard drives, like, that's a considerable chunk of memory space, but if it's not that big, that's good, because that's too much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it weighs in at just under 2 gigs.
Because I installed Far Cry 3, and that was probably about 6.
Okay.
Double
I'm glad that I'm misinformed. I am happy to hear that.
Where'd you get 13?
Where are all of your giggle bytes?
Giggle bytes?
It says here 3 gigabytes of hard drive space on the PC version.
Ah.
That's totally not 2! Liar!
Oh, I know.
I have terrible. Different textures, though.
So. Yeah, no, I'm on the PS3, which, of course, we all know only broadcasts in 720p, so that's, you know, their textures aren't 1080p. So
okay, hold on. I'm just going to look it up.
Multiply 720 by 3, and I carry the 2, and I think that's...
did you subtract the letter B?
Take the B out. Let's see. I got
long. Now, what kind of colors you got in there? You got brown and orange? You should take those out of there as soon as you can, because those don't factor in.
Yeah.
And don't forget to factor in Saturn's gravitational pull.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How did we get here? What are we talking about?
From Dreamcast to Saturn. Let's hear about your other game, Ryan.
Don't Starve. And I gotta say, this is an amazing little indie game. And it's from the guys who did Mark of the Ninja, they did Shank and Shank 2.
Yeah.
So they've got a pretty good library going already, but Don't Starve just blew me away. It's so simple. You get dropped off in the woods. You actually wake up and there's a creepy tall guy standing in front of you and he says, hey, you should probably get something to eat before nightfall. And then the rest is up to you. No tutorial, no anything. And it's sort of, you're lost in this forest environment. Some parts of it are desert. Some parts of it are, you know, just sort of granite wastes. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have to, you know, walk around, chop down trees and build... You build little devices that further your ability to make other things like clothes and things like that. And it's a very deep game, which I really appreciate. There's a lot to see. And I've been playing it for about a week now, and I still haven't even scratched the surface.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, this is the one that's sort of a 2D top-down, if I remember correctly, and there's buffaloes and things out there that are going to get you.
Yeah, it's an isometric viewpoint. The art style is really nice. It's sort of like sort of Tim Burton-esque. Everything's just a little bit curly. But there's wildlife that you know, the wildlife has a sort of nomadic nature to it. So the beefaloes, as they are called, which supply you with manure so that you can grow things on your farms. They sort of wander from plains to plains and you have to follow, you know, sort of, it almost encourages you to lead a sort of nomadic lifestyle, you know, have a base of operations, but go out and explore the world at different times of the year, different times of day, you know, they've got certain crops that only grow during dusk or during night, and nighttime is incredibly dangerous in the game. You can die very easily if you walk away from the computer for a minute to go pour yourself a drink and come back and your fire has gone out, and your character is being attacked in complete darkness on the screen. It's actually kind of terrifying and sad, I found. It's very easy to get into, but there's obviously a lot of depth below the surface I really think is going to... It's going to be a long time game for me, where I'll keep coming back to it in moments, you know.
Is this on PC, console?
I am playing it on Mac. I believe it is available on PC, Mac, and don't quote me on Linux, but when I downloaded it on Steam, I think I saw the Penguin.
Hmm, cool.
Yeah.
Klee Entertainment, they're, what, 4 for 4? Definitely Mark of the Ninja eats, what is it, eats Shank, those two games. So with this, well, they'd be 5 for 5, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean,
in terms of goodness, or what do you mean?
Yeah, greatness. Awesome.
Yeah. Really? I've heard people were sort of iffy on Shank and Shank 2.
Oh, I dug them.
Yeah, no, I think they've got a lot of quality that they're putting out there. A lot of very simple, fun games.
If you're into the Alien Hominin, if you're into the Metal Slug type games, yeah, they're awesome. Sage, you have a question for us?
I have a question for everybody, including the listeners. Robert and I have been shooting back and forth the idea, no pun intended, of possibly shooting some video feed at E3 this year. We have tried to do some of the audio updates while we're there, and we're certainly going to be more diligent about doing audio boo updates this year, I hope. But I'm wondering if listeners would be interested in also being viewers of some of the E3 stuff. So if you think that you would like to watch us cavorting about E3 and being our ridiculous selves, put a comment under the show and let us know if you have any interest in any particular video updates.
There you go. So I could be the Matt Lauer of video gamedom.
Most
hated man.
I don't think you would ever be the Matt Lauer, but yeah, you could be the...
Lack of hair and the jerkness.
You know, I honestly think that the huge difference between our physical characteristics on its own might be of at least some amusement value for our listeners / viewers. Because you're huge and tall and hairless, and I am tiny and not hairless at all. Well, I'm not hairy, but there's a lot of hair on top of my head.
Yes, there is. Sean, too. That kid needs a haircut.
Sean, too.
Hey.
Yes, I like his hair. Like
grandma.
You think Sean needed a haircut? You should have seen me.
Oh.
I actually had shoulder length hair. I rock it quite regularly.
I think it was just the bangs.
I like Sean's hair.
Do you?
I do.
It's like early Bieber.
Ew. God.
Circa 2012.
Okay. He was alive. He probably had that haircut before Bieber was even alive, for one. And for two, it's not early Bieber, Jesus.
Jeremy, what you got for me?
Well, this past couple weeks I've been in kind of a weird iPad crossover land. Oh. Yeah, it is kind of weird. The thing is that I've played a couple of games that I didn't realize at first were even on iDevices at all to begin with. Not entirely true, but the first one that I've been playing is on the Vita and PS3, Dragon Fantasy Book 1 from Muteki Corporation. I'm not sure if that's exactly the right pronunciation for that, but Muteki Corporation is basically a couple of dudes. Yeah, they're nice. They're nice guys, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's kind of a 8-bit retro themed RPG, isn't it? Or am I mistaken with something else?
You are exactly correct. So, Dragon Fantasy is to use the fancy French term. Yes. Exactly, Dragon Warrior and Final Fantasy smushed together. And I just want to tell you, this game pushes my Final Fantasy 1 button hard. Like, real hard, in a real good way.
Getting dirty real quick.
Final Fantasy 1.
A second.
Let me ask you guys, just real quick, what's your favorite 2 Final Fantasy games?
Probably...
5 and 7?
5 and 7? Okay, that's fair.
I think I've played...
7 and 9.
I got a soft spot in my heart for 10-2. Don't laugh.
Okay.
Perfect perspective. There's no wrong now, answer here.
I was kind of thinking of like I played a lot of Final Fantasy X, but I still haven't finished that damn thing. Do the Dissidia games count?
Sure. Why not? Oh,
okay, then Dissidia and Dissidia Duodecim.
No, boo. Okay, well I said there was no wrong answer. But for me, probably the least popular choice, I think, that's probably available is Final Fantasy XII, which I love. I think that's probably my first favorite Final Fantasy game. But my second, A lot of people like it. Seems to be very unpopular, but I also like Final Fantasy 13. So who's to say? But my second one is probably Final Fantasy 1. And Final Fantasy 1 was the only FF game that I beat for 20 years, I think. I mean, I didn't finish one after that until I got to Final Fantasy 12. And I have played through Final Fantasy 1 in various iterations, the NES, the GBA release. You know, they did one on the PSP that I didn't play, but anyway, so it is one of my all times. So this is definitely in the style of the very early NES RPGs, JRPGs. So that being said, I think that kind of conjures for you the image of how the game actually plays. You navigate on an overworld or, you know, dungeon map. They basically are all kind of the same. They just have little pre-created map areas that you walk around in. Random encounters. So it's, like I said, very old school. So if you are immediately, if your litmus test is random encounters, this game is probably not going to be for you. But for me, and actually for me, to be honest with you, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get back into that style of game, but it really kind of sucked me in. You know, I stuck with it for the first, you know, couple of hours, you know, sort of waffling back and forth, not being terribly sure. But then I just went full bore, and I've basically been playing the thing pretty much nonstop. So the game centers around the main character, Ogden. Kind of an interesting story behind the creation of this. So this was originally released, I believe, on the iPhone, and I believe it's also available on Android. But at the time, they made this main character sort of based on loosely one of the designers his father, who I guess had passed away or something like that. So he's actually like an older character, like kind of a balding, bearded sort of dude, which I find kind of neat that like it's a middle-aged sort of character rather than a, you know, plucky 14-year-old spiky-haired, you know, orphan or whatever it is. So
with amnesia.
Yeah, exactly, with amnesia and what, you know, whatever the hell else. And it basically does all of, you know, the main, I mean, there's level grinding, there's you know, you do accumulate spells automatically. You don't have to build those. So it is a little bit stripped down and kind of simplified, but you can beat the main... the way they've got it set it up is they've got sort of chapters, and the first chapter is sort of the main story of it is Ogden's story, and then after you beat that, you sort of play through the same events in kind of an alternate perspective. One of the other characters, Anders the Prince, who can... They each chapter has its own little thing. So Ogden is basically a character by himself, and eventually, he's a character who can actually have party members with him, which you don't get the first time through. And then you play as Gerald the Thief, and I believe his niece, I think it is. And those extra two chapters are sort of side missions. They don't take as long to complete. But, you know, there's a evil, you know, Dark Lord character, that sort of thing. But this game, like a lot of these recently, you know, the interesting thing about all of these sort of retro revivals that we've been having is they're all very self-aware and very tongue-in-cheek. And this definitely has that. So in place of the you know, the ubiquitous slime characters from the Dragon Warrior and Dragon Quest series, they have these little rock monsters, and the rock monsters have funny little attacks. Like there's a you know, rock monster and Mrs. Rock Monster, and then Son of Rock Monster, who's like this punk guy, and he just wants to be loved, and that hits you for 30 hit points or whatever. You know, he's got a mohawk, but he really just deep down wants to be loved or whatever. And when you defeat the characters, they have kind of like weird little, you know, weird little things they do. And it's, you know, it's a little bit...
Do they do the rock lobster?
No, they don't. So it basically the character just disappears and then whatever. But the game is also much more forgiving from a save perspective than the older games would be. So, of course, in old games, if you died, that was basically it. You'd go back to your last save and pretty much start over. In this, you lose half of your money, which, you know, isn't too bad for a, you know, penalty.
Right.
It can be frustrating sometimes, but you can also bank your money before you go out and try and save for different weapons and things. But it definitely felt like I sort of remembered in Final Fantasy I, you get to a point where you after you get your own ship and you sail across the sea to the you know, the elf town, and you have to grind there for silver weapons and stuff like that. And one of my favorite, I don't know what it was about it, but I just really liked grinding and getting those silver weapons and leveling up my characters with their silver daggers and silver swords and things. And eventually you could go out and, you know, traverse new areas. And it definitely had, I mean, it's tuned very well for that. So if, again, if that is your style of game, if that's the kind of thing you like, you know, I think this would be something that you would enjoy. I'm actually sort of hoping that by playing this, my next project afterward might be to actually play Chrono Trigger, which heretofore I have not played.
Wow.
Objection.
And you know, it's interesting. In the last couple of weeks, I thought that you know, the game community was very forgiving, and we all understood. But I have been attempted shamed on no less than 4 occasions on Twitter and elsewhere for things that I haven't played. I don't know what is wrong with everybody. I understand my sins. My sins are manifold. I understand this. So Chrono Trigger is definitely one of those you know, I know I need to get to. But hopefully this is going to be the gateway drug to get me back into that mindset to you know, to jump back. The other thing I didn't mention about this, which is kind of interesting, is you can actually switch back and forth between a true 8-bit version of, I mean, like I was saying earlier when we were talking about Blood Dragon, you know, there's kind of this thing where we say, oh, like Scott Pilgrim is 16-bit or whatever. But if you go back and look at games, there's no way something like Scott Pilgrim versus the World would run on a Super NES. It's just they sort of make it the way that you kind of remember it to be in kind of a very optimistic way. But with this, they all of that stuff. I mean, they, you know, we sort of say like, oh, it's very old school. And you know, even if you go to like chip tunes, like, oh, this is 8-bit music. You're like, nope, I hear no less than 6, you know, channels and, you know, some sound effect channel. There's no way an 8-bit system would play that. But in this case, they really scale it back to, you can just toggle between 8-bit and 16-bit. And it's stark, you know, I mean, it is legit old stuff. So, it's neat. Like, the music is pretty good and stuff. Like, it's not always perfect, and I wouldn't say that this is like a perfect experience, but it is on the PlayStation Network cross buy. So if you buy the PlayStation version, you get the Vita version, and vice versa. It does have cross save as well, which is nice, and you know, it does have limited touch functionality. But I mean, who cares about that stuff? You know, you're just gonna play this straight through. So I think I beat the main story in probably 15 to 20 hours, something like that. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it didn't take too long. It was well worth the experience. I definitely enjoyed it.
Jeremy, so. I gotta ask you. Okay, mm-hmm. Now you played that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to tackle Persona 4 at some point?
I'm still eventually. I want to, for sure. I'm still playing Persona 1, kind of. Here's the thing about me, like, I never really say, like, oh, I stopped playing this. I'm technically still quote-unquote playing something. Like, I haven't actually touched Persona for a couple months, but I'm still kind of, like, playing it. I just don't want to admit to myself that I've given up on something, which isn't to say that I've given up on Persona, but I just get kind of distracted. I have to really focus on the things that, you know, I don't even talk about the stuff that I am actually playing, you know, for my own edification. I mean, I just finished Professor Layton 2. Professor Layton and the Diabolical Box, I just rolled credits on that after sort of playing it on and off for the last year and a half to 2 years. I actually went back and I beat Guacamelee again to get the good ending, which was totally worth it, by the way. If you got the sad ending, you should get the happy ending. It's really good. But yeah, I do plan eventually to get through the entire Persona series. I have a lot of plans in life, though, so who knows? But yeah, I do. And the thing is, I've really been appreciating Persona 1 too. I understand everything. And Blue, you told me 100 times, and everybody that responded to my question when I was saying, like, oh, what Persona should I play? Just like you, everyone was like, you know what? Skip straight to 3. Everybody said that.
Yes, yes. 100%
of people said skip to Persona 3. But I'm like, I'm going to play Persona 1.
I started on 3, and going back to 1 and 2 was pretty rough. I mean, they're worthwhile experiences still, but you kind of have to hold your nose.
Yeah, but I really appreciate that. I love to go back to games, like even bad games. It seems like I bought something else, even though, oh, you know what I bought on the PlayStation sale? I bought Amy. Did you guys play or see Amy?
Which is like, no, I stayed the hell away from Amy.
Yeah, like $1.99 or $2 or something like that. And I'm like, you know what? I understand that I am buying something that is by all accounts a terrible game. But I like to look at the games that are bad or the games that are old, and I like to go in and find the things that were good about them or the things that they did, and I just like to try and understand them a little bit. I like to pick them apart. And so in that sense, I'm really appreciating Persona 1. I don't know how I started talking about Persona 1, but it is old, and you can see things that are old about it, but it just like this, just like playing Dragon Fantasy, you get to see a little slice of something that we don't get as much anymore. I mean, even the new stuff that's hard, like a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, well, Dark Souls is hard. Yeah, but Dark Souls is kind of a different experience. Like, it's different to say that, mm-hmm. you know, Final Fantasy One or Dragon Warrior the First was difficult or grindy in quite the same way.
I like the way you call it the First. Sounds like a grandfather.
It is. You know, if there's just something that has just a title without something next to it, I do like to call it the First. So that's the first thing that I've been playing. Dragon Fantasy Book 1, which originally came out on iOS in, like, 2011, but now on PlayStation Network, Vita, and PS3. Actually, I have not played it at all. I actually have no idea what it looks like on a big TV. I've been playing it only on the Vita, which I think probably... It helps me to look a little more favorably upon it.
Next show, I should have impressions on Soul Sacrifice, which I got in for Vita.
Yeah. So. I want to try Soul Sacrifice one day. Yeah, that's going to be it. So then the other thing that I've been playing, which also I didn't actually realize this until just earlier today, I've been playing a game called Dungeon Hearts, which is by a developer called Cube Root. I'm not sure that anybody's ever heard of them, but it's been published by Devolver Digital. I think that's a little better. Circulated name.
They put out what's his name? Serious Sam.
Mr. Devolver. Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Serious Sam. That's true. But they did. This has nothing to do necessarily with that. But this particular game is and I always knew there was something weird about it. But the game plays and I have to say the name, I don't really care for the name that much. Dungeon Hearts. Like, it's kind of, it falls into that weird, like, obtuse title kind of thing where it doesn't really tell you anything.
It's a Western game? Shadow Hearts and Dungeon something combined.
Or like Kingdom Hearts and Dungeon anything.
Yeah.
Or
Arcana Heart.
So they could have called it anything else and it probably would have been better. But the premise of the game is actually kind of neat. I think I only briefly mentioned in the past when I was playing Theatrhythm Final Fantasy. But it plays a lot like that, except I think you're on the opposite side, if I remember correctly. I think in Theatrhythm you're on the right, and your note highway comes from the left. Yep. In this, the note highway comes from the right. But the concept is the same. You still have four characters, four warriors of light, if you will, and each character has, I guess it's maybe a little bit more like Donkey Konga or something like that, right? Where you have... different colors or different... They're not really notes. They don't really relate to the music as much. Mm-hmm. They're sort of just random puzzly pieces. Little orbs that you need to align in groups of three. And you can do this by grabbing onto them, clicking and dragging your mouse to align them into trios, and then you click one of them and it becomes an attack gem. And then that attack gem will, you know, affect the enemy that you happen to be fighting against. So it's all like sort of the boss battles of Theatrhythm, and it has kind of this puzzly, draggy sort of element. And I kind of figured out there was something weird with this when on PC I would sort of have trouble like clicking and holding and, you know, being able to drag and manipulate the things, because there's just something about the clickiness of the mouse that doesn't quite, while things keep moving, you sort of lose track and it's like suddenly over there. And it gets going pretty fast too. And I feel like now that I know that it's also on tablets or mobile devices, I kind of feel like it might actually work better on that platform, I think. But the bad guys have their notes on the highway too, and if the notes reach you before you destroy them, that counts as an attack. But you, as you organize your gems and your orbs, you can sort of co-opt their attacks and combine them into yours. So if you use an attack gem that's on the same lane as an enemy attack, it sort of acts as a multiplier. And, you know, so the idea is that you want to try and do as many attacks as you can with all of your characters before the enemy ever really gets a chance to attack. Eventually they add mixes of special abilities in and different kind of notes on the highway, so to speak, that do different things, both positive and negative, you know, sleeping spells and things like that. And, you know, after you finish a level, you have a little experience bonus area where basically it just uses the same mechanic. They give you a tight grouping of notes, and there's a little bit of a I don't know, I don't want to call it Tetris, but like I said, part of the idea here is that you manipulate and you move the similar colored gems closer together on the highway. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of dragging and pushing and things like that, and you know, it, for the experience points, everything is sort of grouped tightly together. So you sort of, there's a little bit of a puzzle there where you have to figure out, okay, I'm going to get this guy's experience, and that'll allow me to move this over here, and then I can make a grouping of three with this, and then that'll give my guy experience. And so you basically will level up your characters between each battle, and basically you just continue on until either you die or, you know, you reach the end of the...
Question, Jeremy.
Sure.
I like my puzzlers and especially music games to be a little bit more relaxed, something I can kind of zone out to and enjoy the music. This one sounds pretty intense.
It feels a little more intense, and okay. I am not sure if that... Like I said, I'm really curious now to try this on an actual touch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just always feel like there's, you know, with touching and dragging, I never seem to have that, but there was just something about clicking, and like by the time I would already have missed the thing, and maybe I'm just terrible at it, but...
No, it makes sense. I think a lot of those kind of touch games just don't translate to mouse activity.
Yeah, I would be interested to try this on a touch device, but it is definitely not, in my opinion... I mean, maybe if you get good enough at it, it could be, but I don't know that I would really think of it as a zony-outy, you know, kind of experience, but...
It's like kind of like a you know, totally separate world, but Lumines. Is something you can kind of zone out to. Yeah, it has that puzzler, it has that music vibe, but you don't really have to be 100% engaged with it. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it.
The thing about Luminous, too, though, is Luminous is a very slow starter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it takes you about probably 20 minutes before you get anything that's really challenging in Luminous.
Right.
And then you eventually cross a threshold where you're like, oh my god. Oh, where am I going to put this?
It changes the colors and it messes with your eyes. And you're like, I'm so screwed right now. Yeah.
And then it also changes the pace. And like, that's one of the nice things about Luminous, though, is that it has this pacing where it's like you're in oh shit mode for about 5 minutes. And you're like, oh, thank God. And you break it back
with
down.
The last one, you can, you know, rearrange that.
Exactly.
But I like that kind of relaxed cadence is a alternative to really kind of anxious, nervous, twitchy, like, oh my God, I'm going to die any second now.
I kind of felt, and here's the thing, like, even if you miss, like, even on the higher levels when I was missing a lot of the enemy attacks and they were actually, the boss was attacking me, I don't think it's, like, immediate death penalty or anything like that. You can miss some notes and not, you know, for a while anyway, not have suffer real extreme penalties. But, I mean, did you find that Theater Rhythm was...
It was perfect. It was nice, relaxed. It's just, like, kind of the perfect morning commute game for me.
Yeah, I would say that this is probably a little more intense than, you know, because this starts out pretty relaxed too. But in my playtime with it, I don't know that I would have considered it to be a necessarily relaxing experience. But definitely very charming. The characters are kind of cute, you know, sort of in that, you know, Theater Rhythm. The Theater Rhythm characters were sort of, what would you call them? Like stitchy, sort of artsy kind of. You know, like something you buy.
They kind of look like what was that? Scribble Knots.
A little bit, like Scribble Knots, or like something Dan Paladin would have drawn. Something like that.
Yeah,
but
like a hand-drawn aesthetic.
Yeah. This though, I mean, and again, now that I sort of know that it originated on a touch platform, I can kind of see it. It's, you know, it may just be a little bit of that. It doesn't have the highest production value, but I really did kind of value it. It makes me wonder if we will ever run out of game ideas where you can swap things around and move shapes and stuff like that, which I hope we never do, because there, you know, we certainly never want to run out of fun.
Match three forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that someone will always find a way to reinvigorate that formula. But so kind of a cute little experience. I'm not sure what the price is on it. I want to say it's like $10 ish on Steam. On iOS, I don't even know, but I'm sure it is
$3. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, check it out. Right, check it out on both. $3. You're right. MSRP on the iTunes store. Take a look at it, and you know, if you like Theater Rhythm and, you know, kind of wore that out, try this. It doesn't have the nostalgia factor, but it is kind of an interesting spin on that note highway sort of thing. It'll keep you busy. It's at least worth the, you know, the few bucks that it would take to load it on your iPad.
By the way, the game was Sega Swirl.
On
the game on the web browser, which is also, you know, a match three. Match three forever.
I feel like the Sega Swirl is what I would get in, like, middle school when they would stuff me in my locker and then pull me out just to give me the Sega Swirl. And,
that's when they dumped your head in the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
And they yelled, Sega!
Sega! And they'd pull me out, and then I'd look right at the camera and be like, Sega!
So no console? Not much on console this week, Jeremy.
Well, see, I haven't played big releases. I mean, if you really want to hold, I mean, I'll tell you what, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed 3. I've got a ton of stuff. I mean, they just did PlayStation Plus. Sleeping Dogs now is
that was such an awesome coup, because I was really championed that game. I really liked it.
A lot of people seem to really like it. I guess it just never, for some reason.
It's just, but, you know, it's an open world sandbox. It has the GTA tenants, but it just feels fresh for me because of the location, because of the context, which I really liked. Mm. So I'm a big Hong Kong movie fan.
I'm sort of hoping that it has kind of that vague racist voiceover sort of thing. like you know, in your Deus Ex.
Hoping for racism.
Yeah, like, has there ever been a depiction of, you know, like, China or Hong Kong where it wasn't some white guy, like, you stay out of there, Kuai Lo, you know, that's you're just a little bit embarrassed to be, so I've been doing that. God of War Ascension, I finally got in on that, which is very good in terms of the gameplay, but the storytelling is possibly the worst, I think, in that series. And some people would say, well, you don't play God of War games for the story, but I kind of do.
Really?
I kind of like the idea. Yeah, sure. Like, not the moment-to-moment story. Cause, you know, it's like Kratos is angry at X.
Everything, yes.
And he kills Kratos. Yes, exactly. Pulls the
He's
head
even
off
angry
X,
at the two women that knocked the statue over.
He's angry at Y, and then, you know, pisses on Z, you know, is sort of the story of
Does
God
it War. Have the knock over the statue minigame? That's all I
know. Not this. You know, I haven't gotten to that point yet. I'm sure there's something. In fact, actually, I have already seen, I've looked up the video of it. There's, But
Research.
Yeah, in the name of gaming research. But, I feel like one thing that's interesting about God of War is I feel like the portable games kind of push some innovation into the console versions. Like, they've kind of done some interesting things with the controls, and it's just the like I said, the moment to moment ballet of violence that we know from God of War is still fun, but it like starts out with this like weird media res thing, and like I'm not really interested in the lore that they, you know, they're like, oh, you know, the Furies are, they came from this, and they
baseball Furies,
they, you know. Yeah, the baseball Furies. Actually, we talked about this last time, didn't we? Yes. We talked about how that's actually the Anabasis. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of history again here on the Tech Gaming Podcast. But anyway, so God of War Ascension I've been playing. So anyway, I have been playing things on many platforms, but I sort of pick and choose what I talk about on the show.
Cream of the crop, Curtis.
That's right. Want. Only the best.
Welcome to Indie Outlook, your source for emergent games from smaller teams. I'm Robert. With me, as always, is Sai.
Yay.
And today, we have a couple of promising prospects on hand.
Yeah, today we've got Recruit.
Yes.
And Chasm, or as you like to call it, Chasm, was it?
I never said that. I never said
yes,
that.
Yes, you
all.
Did.
I do say Recruit. And when I say recruits, I think about that time in my life when I was obsessed with overhead shooters. There was this game when I was a kid, I had this rotating stick, Ikari Warriors.
That time in your life, that means that you're not anymore?
Yeah, I'm past
that.
That's
a lie.
Stop it. Some other games in that category, Bitmap Brothers, they produced a game called The Chaos Engine for SNES, and in Genesis it was called Soldier of Fortune, these parts. Expendable for the Sega Dreamcast, which I enjoyed. Anyway, very few of those type of games have escaped the long reach of my trigger finger. So when I first saw screenshots and video of Recruits, I was fired up and ready to enlist.
Two trigger fingers?
Just one. Just trigger finger.
Ow.
So anyway, the game is in the early alpha stage. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that said, it's currently available on Desura with a $5 purchase, and which generously rolls over to the full version. Now, I know both you and I had a little bit of difficulty downloading from Desura.
What's up with that? That was the very first time I ever had any difficulties using Desura.
Yes, I never had a problem before, and it took me about four times, and I finally had to close Desura. It took me two days,
because the first time that I tried it, it just would not do anything. And then, of course, I had to try it out the second time. But it was very confusing at first. I didn't understand what that was. But.
Nothing about the developers. More of a complaint on Desura. So one thing I did notice after playing about 10 games of Recruits is that I had lost a few friendlies. I lost about three. And on the main screen, they give you about 100 recruits. And when one dies, the counter drops. So right now, currently, I have about 97 recruits. And I have no idea if you don't get to play the Alpha anymore after your entire battalion is put to rest. Nor do I really want to find out. But it seems like a possibility. How many did you lose? Sorry.
I lost them all. I kind of sucked
Wait,
at it.
You lost all 100? Jesus, you put them to death? Wow. What happens? Do you get to play after you lose?
You know what? I really don't remember right now.
Okay.
It was such a horrible, traumatic experience that I just...
It was. So. Anyway, let's go back to the jungle, the jungle that still haunts you. So the first level is this jungle setting full of flora.
Chickens!
Yes, it's got chicken. It's got the requisite exploding barrels and enemies that just kind of are standing around waiting to be gunned down. You control one soldier in a four-man squad, and if you choose the multiplayer option, and you can have up to three people to assist you. Otherwise, you're stuck with these AI drones who, they return fire, and they keep themselves from getting killed most of the time. But they're not going to be recognized.
They're useless.
No, they're not going to be recognized for any kind of tactical proficiency on the battlefield. They're not useless. They take out some guys every once in a while. now, players have three control options, and as of right now, they're all a little less than ideal. You can use the WASD keys to move your soldier, and while the mouse moves your cursor on screen. Alternatively, you can play the game like an RTS, where if you right-click a place on the map, you can tell your soldier, your team, where to go. You can also plug in an Xbox 360 controller. That's an option. And you use the one stick, left stick to move your soldier around. And the other one is to move the reticule around the screen. And the one thing that the game does do well control-wise is strafing. It's easy to kind of paint an area, and you keep your fire button pressed as you move about. And you can do that either standing or crouched, although I didn't see any more precision when you drop down. Did you? Did you drop down?
No, actually, I find that extremely difficult. I know that's something that you appreciate a lot, but in my case scenario when I was playing, I found that to be one of the most complicated parts.
Okay. Yeah, the only advantage, or the only, I guess, disadvantage to dropping down was your movement speed got reduced to half, so I didn't see any increase in precision. You can't go prone. Anyway, the one thing that was slightly off-putting for me, and I'm being really nitpicky here, is the perspective of the game. You can, in some levels, they encourage you to be stealthy. And so moving through the bush, it changes the look from your soldiers. They go from these detailed units to kind of these light blue outlines. And when you're deep in the shit, you see your enemies, you know, perfectly. But there's no real fog of war beyond kind of the on-screen perspective that rotates as you move your cursor. It's as if a drone is kind of viewing the action, and from what I've seen of the game's fiction, there's really no mention of a drone. So you know, it's probably just me trying to sim up everything, but it's just a little weird. I expected a little bit more Fog of War there.
Well, well, let's talk about one of the good things about the game, though. I mean, one of the things that I like the most is is the graphics. I think the game is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Usually gore doesn't really, you know, turn me on, but in this way, it kind of fits with the game. You'll see body parts and you'll see heads. It just kind of fits with the vibe. And it's not over the top. It's just brief.
I think it's just enough.
Transitory. Yeah, it's just there. It's not excessive, but it definitely puts you in the right frame of mind there. Anyway, back to the jungle. First mission, you probably want to, when you're playing, circle around counterclockwise. You sweep up the play field. Your first priority is the exploding barrels. Those will take out enemies and huts. And then you shoot any enemies that remain. Then finally, you blow up the huts or more of the little fuckers. Will pour out. The one thing that it does well is simulating the excitement of firefights. You see the lines of tracer fire kind of pour across the screen, and going full auto, it doesn't noticeably reduce your accuracy. Instead, recruits is really about painting an area with fire until your target's downed. As such, it's pretty easy to run low on ammo. In fact, I ran out of ammo in the first time I played it. Fortunately, you can pick up enemy ammo before their rifles fade from existence, either by when you're using the controller, you run over their guns, or with the mouse and keyboard combination, you press E while standing over their rifles. It is, right now, it's a little inexact. There'll be groups of rifles around with no available ammo, and I figure if enemies can respawn, I think dropped arms with full magazines should be okay. Yeah?
Sure.
Okay. So a few things I do like. Recruits just isn't a name. Not just a name that hasn't been used before. It really plays into the idea of the game. For every successful action, you watch and your teammates. They grow in rank. And the game doesn't just parade in its stats. There seems to be more health as you work your way up the chain of command. So I assume 4-star generals are bound to be like these big walking tanks. Supposedly there's going to be morality. There's going to be a trauma system in the game. So if you are heroic or you see a lot of traumatic experience, you will be affected, much like XCOM. I honestly didn't see any of that in the current build. I also didn't see classes, but I'm sure the developer, Commotion Games, they'll give me my damn sniper rifle.
I knew you were going to say that. I so knew you were going to mention that.
You're going to make me one happy camper.
Do you know what I'm actually looking forward for is the 4-player co-op?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think that will be really fun.
Yes, that would be a refreshing reprieve from the AI right now. So to wrap up, Recruits shows a lot of promise. Right now, it's about 5 times better than that awful Expendables game that Ubisoft crapped out a few months ago. And considering the dev team is likely much smaller, I can recommend giving the alpha a try and hoping that it shapes up nicely. So
nice.
Go Recruits.
Yes, to Recruits.
So you're going to talk about that game called, how do I say it?
Chasm. That's your favorite new word.
Chasm.
So, well.
You know who taught me the word chasm?
The what?
You know who taught me the word chasm?
Who did?
Sting.
He has a song. Thank you for that.
And I didn't know what that meant, so I looked it up. And Fortress Around Your Heart is the name of the song. From Dream Blue Turtles, last song on the first side. And so I looked that up, and Sting taught me the meaning of that word. So let's talk about the game.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah.
Transition point.
Today I picked the latest of Discord games. The name, as we talked about, is Chasm. This is a 2D action RPG game. It is just got this retro feeling, kind of a Metroid, Castlevania style dungeons, you know, and a beautiful pixel art.
Yep. Monster Boy.
Yeah?
Did you ever play Monster Boy?
Yeah, now that you mention it, yes.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, it kind of does. Well, the premise of the game is pretty simple. You are just a soldier passing through this remote town on your way home. The miners of the town have completely disappeared into this long forgotten temple far below the town. Somehow this awakens some sort of ancient evil in the town. And of course, you know, you being the good guy you are, you offer yourself to explore the mines and rescue everyone and destroy evil. Yay!
Do you have much of a you don't really have much of a choice because you're poor, you have no money, you don't even have a weapon, you have two fists.
You have,
right? You have to find a weapon in the chest.
You have absolutely nothing, you have no idea what's going on, and every single time you're walking around town, it's in a loop, so yes, you have to go downstairs.
A lot of these games are about really coming from nothing. They are about the experience.
But anyways, the demo is pretty short, but you start, you know, around town and you only get to see some of the levels of the mine. But in brief, in this exploration, you actually get to see a good grasp of what the mechanics of the game are, the items, the combat system, and of course, you know, the enemies and whatnot. There's rats, there's worms, and the bats. Oh my god, the freaking bats.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, you know, that it all looks great, but it is much more complicated than it actually looks like.
Did you mention the worms?
Yes.
Yes, those worms, they just hang from the ceiling. They drop down on you. That reminds me, once I went into the mines, it was very Metroid-ish because not only do you have like kind of a floaty jump, but you have these enemies that are just waiting there to, you know, waiting to be awakened, and then they mess with you. And I really like that. It's not like they immediately see you, but you're kind of creeping along, and then they kind of fall, like the worms fall above you, and you know, all hell breaks loose.
But you know, the game is still yet to be finished, but it is expected to be done sometime soon this year. And of course, you know, Discord requires some extra funding for the game, so they just ran a very successful Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. There are still a few days left as we speak, so you know, if people listening, they want to participate, that there is still a chance for them to, you know, collaborate with the Kickstarter.
Jump into chasm.
Can I
talk about a spoiler?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Pressing the space bar to jump.
Wow.
I was pressing W. I was pressing up everything but the space bar.
I don't know if you actually got to this part that says that growth requires sacrifice. Did you get to that part?
No.
I could tell you, but I'm not going to tell you.
I didn't get there.
I can tell you too. Well, that's fine. It's okay.
Maybe I didn't.
You know, the best thing I liked, you know, is how the art and the animation comes together with this demo. I mean, there's an animation and sound for absolutely everything. I loved the details of the game. The game is absolutely beautiful. That's one of the things that I enjoy the most.
And don't try to hit the escape key. It's the enter key to bring up the menu.
Oh yeah, you had to suffer through that as well.
Yes.
I tried, as soon as I figured out how to open the menu, I tried to, you know, do something with it, and it just had no idea what the hell to do that.
So, I hit the escape key about 25 times straight. Give me a menu, damn it, so I can see what my controls are. That's just PC gamer instinct.
So that's it. We have our two games. We have
Recruits. Which do you like better?
Chasm. You know, it's hard to say because they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go to hell. I won't.
It's the indie death match. And everyone's a winner. Okay.
You're a winner? No, yes. Never mind. Just, I'm not going to pick one. I love them both very much.
Yes. We love them both. And we love you guys for listening in.
Yes, guys. And also, I have something very important to say, which you didn't lead me to it. How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
I've been working very hard, and coming soon, we are going to have the launch of Cognition Episode 3, The Oracle. And since, you know, I work with you and everything, I'm going to give you the exclusive. It's going to be available for the 16th next week.
Wow. For the low, low cost of?
The same as the other ones.
For the low, low cost of how much? $100? No.
Wow. No.
We should be like Phil Fish. Say it's worth $90, so buy it.
That's sure. Not funny. Let's go with that.
You so, yes, episode 3. Looking forward to it. Okay. Stop laughing and take us home, Si.
I don't like you very much today. First, you just ignore Indie Outlook for a whole month, and then you just troll me and hate on me on this one. See?
How did I hate? Give me three examples.
Hate. Complete hate.
Because I turned Indie Outlook into a death match?
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. It's a peace and love match then. Everyone.
Anyways, guys, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Everyone's a wiener.
Everyone's a wiener. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please leave your comments in the show thread. Bye.
See you next time.
Trivia.
Trivia.
It's number one. You still there, Ryan?
I am still here.
Okay. Two Red Bull in hand. He's trying to power his way through trivia. Question number one. Since it was first announced at Cologne, the game developers conference over in Germany, Dust 514 had to scale back its ambitions. Which of the following goals was never announced by developer CCP Shanghai? Is it A, cross-play with Xbox 360 owners? B, a companion app for the PS Vita? Yeah, right there. C, connectivity to EVE Online's political and economic system. Somebody's cheating. D, acceptance of bitcoins for player-to-player transactions. Or E, support for mouse and keyboard as well as Move.
That one.
Yeah, I'm going to say, because nobody ever does mouse and keyboard in it. It's one of those things that I really lament. The only game, in fact, does anyone know, there should be a trivia question about how many games actually use mouse and keyboard. I can only think of one off the top of my head. Which, does anyone know?
Unreal Tournament?
Can anyone think of... Yes, that's the only one I can think of, was Unreal Tournament 3.
There. Bam! Right there, Trivia Master.
There it is.
Crown
you
me.
Win. That's it, we're done. We're out. So yeah, I agree with Sage. I think that's going to be the one. And the only of those, the only thing that I know they had even planned was the Vita app, but as far as I know, that's still in the cards.
Blue?
I'm going to go out on a limb, and it's probably a very, very thin and frail limb, that it's B. Yeah, B.
Who's typing furiously?
I'm typing a love letter to Jeremy, actually.
We're having a special chat.
Wow.
Sector, she's cheating on you!
Bring it, Sector, bring it.
You guys gonna fight? Neat.
Actually, maybe we'll join forces, who knows?
That's intimidating. I don't want to see that. Are you guys going to be like Mecha Shiva and then I have to date both of you at the same time?
Is that Shiva from Mortal Kombat?
If that's what you're into, baby. It's
Actually, Robert, I was thinking of Venture Brothers, but yeah, sure. Okay.
And Jeremy sounded like Austin Powers right there. Yeah, baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
See, that does turn me on.
$100 billion.
Wow. Ryan, please pick.
I'll jump in here. I gotta say, I would say that the one thing would be the crossplay with 360, because I don't know, I hadn't heard that that was ever planned, and that seems fundamentally against mm-hmm. what they're trying to do, right? I mean, it's PS3 only, am I correct?
I'm not gonna answer.
You can answer these.
I'm not gonna give you a clue. There's no fishing in trivia.
I apologize.
Correct it.
Okay. If you could trick him into letting something slip, that's something else, but he won't. Yes.
Don't peer up the trivia host skirt, please. Correct answer, acceptance of bitcoins for player-to-player transactions. Ooh. Bitcoins, baby. Yes. Mouse and keyboard.
Did I
guess that was E?
The Bitcoin thing has like imploded.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was D. Mouse and keyboard was E.
So they are still planning mouse and keyboard support, huh?
Yes. Well, that was announced. I'm not sure if they're still playing it. They also announced the companion app, but I'm not sure if that's coming through. The crossplay with Xbox 360 was canceled.
So it sounds to me like this whole question is suspect. Like it's all yet TBD.
No. Which of the following questions was never announced by developer? It's all about the listening game, Jeremy. That's the key to winning.
They announced a question?
Sore losers. For that, we got five more Madden questions.
Oh, God, no.
I got backup for my backup. Okay, actually, number two. Also awaiting gamers is Metro Last Light, the sequel to the 2010 cult classic Metro 2033. Name the voice actor who didn't lend their vocal cords to the game. Is it A, Lance Hendrickson, B, Nolan North, C, Zachary Levi, or D, Patton Oswalt?
A?
Lance Hendrickson.
Why would Patton Oswalt ever be?
That's what I was thinking, but he is a huge nerd, though.
It's true, it's true. I could see that. But
yeah, I agree with you. In fact, that was the answer I was tempted to give. But
I could be tricking you guys with Nolan North.
I just throw it out there, even if I'm wrong. I fucking love Metro 2033, and I'm so excited for the sequel. So I hope I'm not wrong, but if I am wrong, don't let that be an indication of my love of the game.
Next week, I'm going to play Troy Baker sound clips, and you will, and Nolan North sound clips, and you will have to identify each.
Okay, fine.
You should play him in reverse.
Paul is dead.
Yeah.
Worst trivia since Madden.
I'm gonna go with Patton Oswalt. I mean, I could see that he might be involved, but I agree. My first thought was like Patton Oswalt. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I have to go Patton Oswalt as well.
Blue.
I'll agree with them. I'll go Patton Oswalt because I'd probably pick Nolan North and be wrong about it. I'd never blame it.
Sage, did I hear yours?
Did you? I said A.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's been so long. Correct answer. This is Zachary Levi. Chuck, baby. Oh. That was a loose one.
Somebody had Taco Bell.
Number three. This week's release of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, Blade Wolf. Let's players step into the metallic hide of LQ-84I. Which of the following devices isn't in the quadrupedal robot's arsenal? Is it A, spring-loaded superheated knives, B, jaw-mounted flamethrower?
We're just going to make up weapons now. It's a chainsaw on his hydro back,
D, stealth camo. Jeremy, nobody likes a sore loser. Matt,
he's probably
or
got...
E, tentacle hair.
Yeah. He's probably got the knives. He's probably got the stealth. I'm pretty sure he's got a chainsaw. So what was the other one that was left?
Flame mount?
Yeah. The flame mounted one. I'm against that.
That sounds awesome. How could that not be in anything? Of course, I've never seen it.
Because I literally didn't hear any of the answers, but it's fine. You don't have to repeat them, Robert, because I know you hate
this
that.
This is
so
how
I'm
she got
through
law school. I didn't. C sounds good to me.
I'll go with flame mouth. Needs a Mentos, whatever it's, you know, Mentos, fresh maker.
I'm gonna go with the chainsaw just because of the placement. You said the chainsaw is on its back.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna
great
go
defensive
with the
move though.
Yeah, but what if Ryden?
Who's gonna attack you from behind when you got a fucking chainsaw on your back?
See, here's,
I mean,
here's
fuck
my
you!
Rationale.
I got a chainsaw.
You guys are thinking way too hard about.
No, no. Here's my rationale, because all of the other weapons are like choppy weapons, and that game is all about choppying. So I don't think they're really modeling a lot of things on fire. So that's my.
Yeah. Choppy, choppy, your BB.
What about stealth camo?
It's all about stealth camo. Are you kidding?
Okay. Correct answer.
Metal Gear.
You got it, Jeremy. Jaw mounted flamethrower.
Yes, flame mounted jaw thrower.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
That too.
Is it like on the side of your fireplace and it just throws jawbones at you when you're an ass?
Like that. Number four next
what
week.
What the hell is that?
Of the Starship Dampry, the inaugural release from Guild 02's collection of games. Name the game developer. Name the game developed by Level 5. That I screwed this question up. Uh-oh. Name the game that developer Level 5 hasn't had a hand in. Is it A, Rogue Galaxy, B, Winning 11-3, C, Chulip, or D, White Knight Chronicles?
Is that has or has not?
Has not.
Has not.
Level 5?
Ask the professor. Lady.
B as in boy.
B as in boy. Winning 11-3. Are you just guessing?
Fucking yeah, man. I don't know the answer. You want me to look it up and cheat?
No.
Jesus.
No.
No, wait a minute. Now, is this level 5 or factor 5?
Level 5.
Because I'm
level 5.
Not
the Here's the thing. Smart. I happen to know that Chulip, which is the kissing RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Level 5 was, because they just released it as a PS2 classic, and somehow I have a copy of it.
Bandit strikes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, what is this copy of Chulip doing on my PlayStation? But that was a who's Harvest Moon? Natsume. I don't know that.
Yeah,
I mean, it would have to have been like a weird collaboration. So, but then again, it is kind of a weird little round-headed kid game.
That was a weird GameStop.
Weird
exclusive.
Little. Round-headed kid game.
Yeah, well, you know how Level 5 does. Like, they're latent characters. Like, everybody's, like, weird-looking with beady
Not Rogue
locks.
Galaxy. People are nice and slim.
I can't remember who did Rogue Galaxy, but I don't think it was Level 5. That was one of those games I always was kind of, like, on the fence about getting, and I've heard it was, like, a really kind of Star Wars-y kind of rip-off sort of game, but which is good for me. I like that, but...
Dark Cloud 2 also did.
Final Fantasy XII awesome. Was a huge Star Wars rip-off.
Yeah.
which is part of what makes...
Suikoden
awesome.
Was kind of a Star Wars rip-off.
Except instead of like
a
hairy
Star Wars
ape,
Star
they
Wars.
Had sexy bunny women.
The first three movies were Star Wars ripoffs.
Exactly what I was gonna say.
I'm gonna go with Chulip. I'm pretty sure I'm wrong because now that I think about it, they're all round-headed, beady-eyed people, and that sounds like something Level 5 would have done. But I'm going with Chulip.
I'm gonna go with Winning 1169 or whatever it's called.
Oh. Okay.
I will go with D. I am totally out of my element with this question.
White Knight. Correct answer, Jeremy.
Oh no. Don't say Chulip. White Knight Chronicles. That's exactly the wrong answer. Like, they're well known. They're well known for that game.
Oh, geez. Well, I'll call it Falling on My Sword later to recoup.
Notorious.
Some of
Notorious.
We can't all know everything.
Yes, Chulip is the correct answer. Good job, Jeremy.
Fuck.
Woo.
Those big-headed, beady-eyed kids rule again.
I know,
and they're into kissing.
So kissy.
Number five, it's time to mount the Tower Offensive with the release of Anomaly 2. Name the European city that developer 11-Bit Studios calls home. Is it Warsaw, Poland? B, Prague, Czech Republic? C, Dublin, Ireland? Or D, Cologne, Germany?
I was going to say it's going to be the one Eastern European country, but there are two of them.
Yes.
They're from Poland.
Krakow.
See, I would say Poland, because I know there are some people in Prague, but I'm pretty sure I haven't ever heard of Anomaly being...
Poland, bitches!
Okay, I'll go with... I don't know where bitches is in Poland, but I'll go with Poland.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on the Samaritan train as well.
I will also, but I'll add a little bit
is
of...
Is that tribute. The coal train?
No.
Did you know that the person who created the Bic line of pens, his name was actually Bitch? I've actually heard this is true. I can't.
Scratch.
Yeah.
This is so bullshit.
So they changed the name. You need to check it on Snopes. But I've heard that they changed it from Bitch to Bic. It was just B-I-C-H. It was just B-I-C-H, and it was pronounced Bitch. But they're like, you probably aren't going to get away with that in English speaking countries. So they changed the Bic. What's that?
Okay, that's true, but it wasn't spelled with a T. It was Marcel Bic, spelled B-I-C-H.
How was it pronounced, though?
It's almost like someone said that.
But but that's not this. But I think that it's B-I-C-H and it's pronounced Bic because he's French. Right?
Bitch. Yeah, bitch would be a pretty odd word for a name. I mean, you must like have it in for your. For your kid, if you name him Bitch or Jeeves,
but they have weird names. Like, isn't there a name that's in French? That's
I heard
like
that Mount
Blancpain or something.
Mount Blancpain's were once called Motherfuckers.
Okay, this is just ridiculous.
I'm sorry.
No, I just heard that the other day. I think he's right.
We got a question from Fast Eddie. He said, given the red rings of...
Hey, wait,
we never got the correct answer.
You guys knew it. It was Warsaw.
Poland, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Because you reviewed Anomaly, the first one.
Yep, that's true.
Okay, so Fast Eddie, given the red rings of death with Xbox 360s in the yellow light of death, as well as DREs on PS2, how likely are you to buy the next generation of hardware at launch?
See, yeah. I think that's the wrong question. I think the right question is, given that the upcoming new generation of consoles are total pieces of garbage,
litigator, class action lawsuit incoming.
How likely am I to purchase them? And the answer is not at all for that reason.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting E3.
I feel forced to. Just to keep up with reviews.
But throw that out. Like that's a cop out. Personally, for the games that you're going to play, like for your enjoyment, pretend you're just playing something because you're interested in what you can do with those consoles.
If
nothing else, you buy a PS4 just so you can use your Vita as a controller. Would you buy it?
So that's the thing. Like, I'm pretty much committed to getting a PlayStation right now because of PlayStation Plus and having a Vita. And I'm pretty, I've kind of come to the point on console adoption, and I think I've mentioned this before, but if you're ever, I kind of feel like if you're ever, quote unquote, going to adopt a platform, why not do it early? I mean, the price drops aren't that drastic for the time you have to wait for it. And
liability, Jeremy, I would say.
Yeah, but I mean,
I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, look at the launch 360s.
How much money you save. You know, those $60 titles at launch can be had for $20 a pop if you
Yeah, that is true. But and that's usually what I wait for.
I think the opportunity cost is you're paying, $40 to $30 playing it early, which seems like a fair amount, though. I would gladly pay $30 to not have to wait a year.
You're going to pay more money fixing all the shit in your house that you break in a frustration rage when your fucking piece of equipment doesn't work, because the first gen edition usually doesn't, given our question that this was based on. Mm-hmm. And then you go into a rage and you break like your table and five glasses and all of your controllers and your Vita, and then you have to replace all of that.
And of course, there's also the expensive anger management issues that you'd obviously need if you trashed your entire house over a video game system.
Video games were the anger management, Blue. Now you're fucked.
You go Godzilla on the place.
Yeah, yes. To be honest with you, I am not too worried about the reliability of the hardware. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I'm not really.
How many PS3s have you owned, Jeremy?
I actually had also a hard drive failure, so I've only had two PS3s.
Okay.
But I've actually had like three, because I got a yellow light on one, mm-hmm. and then a hard drive failure, or maybe it was the other way around. But anyway, so it turns out that I'm on my third sort of iteration or whatever, because you know, going back and re-downloading everything. So I'm on my third one, but technically, I only had one. System failure. I haven't had any problems with my Xbox, but it is it's not a launch one though. I mean, I didn't get my Xbox until a couple of years. I mean, I think it's even one of the Jasper chipsets or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't anticipate any problems with that. And just generally speaking, I kind of feel like it was such an issue this gen. Mm-hmm. I feel like they are going to be working on that a lot.
That does make sense, because Microsoft did have to ante up a pretty penny to take care of that.
Yeah, I feel like it is worth it to them to get it right, right as they can. I mean, nothing lasts forever, so...
And I also think that really hurt their efforts in the Japanese market. I think over there, a lot of people saw 360s as having issues, and it didn't help that, you know, you had to return that and, you know, send it and take care of it, and retailers didn't want to handle that at all, which really kind of hurt things for them.
Yeah, so for me, I'm not, you know, my decision isn't really going to be based on the reliability of the hardware at all. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm pretty much set on getting a PlayStation close to launch, if not at launch. For Microsoft, I only have to hear one thing. I mean, my ears are kind of closed to Microsoft for the most part, unless they can tell me the magic words, free
basic. Disgaea exclusive.
Online. Yeah. Free basic online.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if they can say those words, I am much more willing to listen to what they
have. What about subsidized at $15 a month? is that a magic word for you?
I mean, that is an interesting... here's my take on that, because I'm surprised they haven't already been subsidizing at their Xbox 360.
They do.
They do. I think I've heard you can do it through the Microsoft Store or something like that, but it's not a widely available plan. Sure. So what I tend to do, and here's the other thing, is I don't worry too much about the price tag necessarily of a mm-hmm. launch console, because you just finance that stuff, you know, go to Best Buy and get, like, depending on the final price tag. I mean, I paid my Vita off, which was a launch day purchase, after all the add-ons and everything. It was probably $500 and with games and everything, and they gave me like 6 months to pay that off, so mm-hmm. you just amortize it out, no big deal. So I don't know. So I think for me, that's really going to be more of the issue, is what am I going to be getting from them? What are they going to do to incentivize me?
All right. Ryan?
You know?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, I've been rocking the PS3 not for too long. I actually am a recent console convert from my previous gaming PC, which is now sitting comfortably at Samurage's house.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been really enjoying it, and I got to say I agree with Jeremy. I think that there's no way as a company that you cannot learn from the mistakes that happened last gen. I mean, they have to have come out of that with some semblance of at least an idea that they need to build it out of better stuff. You know, make sure that everything, you know, it's not going to hit any huge snags like that. But even so, if you just wait a week, you're going to start to hear those stories come up.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing too about this, along with what Ryan's saying, is learning the lessons from last gen. I kind of feel like the 360 was a lot more of a rush job than you know, than this is. I mean, I think they've been ramping up to this for a long time, whereas with the 360, I'm sure they had it in development for a while, but I mean, essentially it was PC parts. And they, the interesting thing about it was how the Xbox, the original Xbox, just dropped dead one day. And then they're like, oh, now we've got this other thing. And now they've got to have something out on market, and they wanted to get it out before the PlayStation. And I just don't see that being a factor this time in the same way.
Jeremy, I don't disagree with you, but did you guys forget, every Microsoft operating system ever as the counter to that argument? They never learn from their past mistakes. They always release stuff that, like, oh, we sort of screwed this up. Here's a patch, and here's a patch. Oh, we're going to release it in 4 months because we fucked it up. Oh,
yeah. I heard one day we're going to release an operating system without a start button. Sounds crazy. It may happen.
From a software standpoint and an interface standpoint, I actually kind of look forward to that a little bit. I mean, I think that the flexibility of the current platforms has been just an amazing thing that we've never had before. I mean, we've talked about this before too, but the game systems now are doing things that we never conceived of at the time that they launched. The PlayStation especially is like a totally different machine in some ways, but from a hardware reliability standpoint, and you're right though, Sage, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I'm sure they'll do better this time, but like I said, I mean, I guess from like Ryan said, I mean, if they haven't, I mean, how could they possibly not want their hardware products to function as optimally as possible? I feel
but
like
I don't, I don't think it's a result of that. I think it's what you said. I think part of it is a rush job thing, and I think part of it is the competitive, oh, we want to get ours out before, you know, the other people do. So I don't think it's that they want their hardware to be crappy. I think it's that there are oversights that are inherent to the competitive edge that they're all trying to maintain.
And I guess another factor here is that we don't really know that much about, I mean, we don't know a release date on the Xbox at this juncture. We don't know what it is or what it's going to be in it. But I guess I'm also basing part of my confidence on, I've been really impressed so far with the, I guess, even though it's still a fairly mysterious thing, the the candidness with which Sony has sort of trotted out Mark Cerny to talk about this stuff, and they've been extremely candid with their thought process behind the design of the thing. I mean, we haven't seen the hardware yet. We don't know about how the layout of the actual components are going
to
be.
One of the things both the corporations talked about is how close they are to PC architecture and a lack of proprietary type of elements, and I think that could be a positive.
Well, Sony has ditched the cell architecture for their developer's kit, which I think is a great idea for them. I mean, I heard horror stories about developing things for the PS3, so.
The interesting thing, though, about both of these was that from the Yellow Light of Death and the Red Ring perspective, they were all about heat management. Ventilation. On the PlayStation, you would actually get warping of the board where the graphics CPU was housed, and it would actually pull loose as the board warped. And with the Xbox, I guess it was the same thing.
But the Xbox was also a vibrational issue. If you had it at one angle, it screwed up the discs.
Remember the old Xbox used to have drive errors. I remember the big thing you wanted to have a Thompson drive.
That was a problem that I thought killed my original Xbox, and it turns out is actually a dusty lens. As weird as it was, and I figured it out after I bought a new one.
But generally speaking, I mean, even current gen, I mean, even if you go back, I think there has been some problem. I mean, everybody remembers turning their original PS1 upside down to get it to read discs and stuff like that. So I'm sure there will be some failure of some kind. Who knows? I mean, it's just one of those things. I mean, the same thing happens when you buy anything, when you buy a car, when you buy a television set.
I haven't heard much, maybe because they haven't sold enough, but I haven't heard too many problems with Wii U's.
Well,
maybe there's not enough out there to actually sell.
That's a distinct possibility.
Okay.
Yeah, but they definitely have had their, I mean, Nintendo has a whole other, I think they've generally created the most reliable hardware, but their software interface definitely.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the original NES, which, I mean, that's good luck getting the original non-top loader system working. I mean, aside from that, I mean, Nintendo's had some incredible hardware. I've only had just one system that I can think of die off on me, and that was my original Super Nintendo.
Just wait another 10 years when people start to turn yellow.
Well, you know, actually, my original one that died was one of those yellow, was it oxidized or whatever, systems. But, yeah, it was actually, I think it was like a launch or close to a unit. But I know with, for me, I'm not getting anything else at launch that's, you know, at least at home console stuff. I mean, portables, I mean, you know, Nintendo stuff, yeah, that's a pretty safe bet it's going to work. But, I mean, I got lucky with my original Xbox 360. It's, you know, I got it day one, waited in line at Walmart 7 hours to get it. And it actually lasted me 3.5 years. And and this is like when some of those launch units weren't even lasting like 3 months. For it to last as long as it did, I kind of got really lucky there, and I don't think I'm going to press my luck anymore. Because, I mean,
No whammies.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But, yeah, it's a kind of a gamble. I mean, it's whenever I do buy, you know, something that's, you know, expensive, a TV or whatever, if it's brand new, I mean, I usually get the warranty on it just to make sure nothing goes wrong. And I think it's a smart thing to do these days.
Remember for the Xbox 360, GameStop selling their warranties? Oh, we gave some of these back. Good times. We got one more question. You guys talk about cliches and tropes. Parentheses, which I had to look up a lot. What's your favorite? What's your least favorite cliche in the video game world?
Dude, bro, shooters.
Least favorite.
Yes, least favorite cliche.
Definitely the dude bros. Definitely dude bros.
Shitty dialogue in horror survival games. Mm. That is not campy enough to be funny. Like, somehow a horror survival game doesn't need good dialogue, and that's happened in a lot of them. And some of them push it, like, to the extreme where they make it campy, and then that's funny. Mm. But some survival horror games just... because it makes me want to, like, pull my ears off.
Which one? Resident Evil?
Well, most of the Resident Evils don't bother me. I think 5, I hated the dialogue. Mm-hmm. But actually, most of them are kind of okay.
Mm. Okay.
The gerbil sandwich. You were fine with the gerbil sandwich, or well, was it maybe giblet?
Robert Blake in a gerbil outfit. All of them.
But no, that bothers me just because I like survival horror genre so much.
For me, I am. I mean, we sort of made fun of it a little bit earlier, but I'm a little bit tired of the amnesia. You know, the amnesiac way of like, oh, you're going to discover your own story because you have amnesia. I don't know that. I mean, do a lot of people even really do that anymore? Is that still a thing that happens?
I heard in Japan, it's still big.
Still big in Japan?
Yes.
Yeah.
I watched an episode with Squid Girl. I watched an episode with Squid Girl that had amnesia as a story plot. That's a good show, by the way.
I'm a little tired of that. And then the other one that I have been okay with heretofore, but I would like to see improved upon, is the tutorial where, you know, the tutorial is sort of like a training mission. Like, look up to see what the, you know, this or that thing is. Yes. Now look to the side. We're going to calibrate your visor. Yeah, I'm okay with what we've got so far, but let's cut that off and start.
I like when they jump from that into they throw you in the middle of the ship. It's yeah. like, okay, okay, would you like inverted basics. Controls? Oh, now five guys with RPGs
that is not
are
a trope, but can
you.
We just talk for a minute? No, let's not do it. But that whole inverted control thing, oh.
What, you don't like down to look up?
You know what? I said once, and I stand by it, inverted controls are for people who think that everything is airplanes.
I could go.
I agree.
Jeremy,
I agree.
You know what you just made me think of? The other thing that I hate, which they do in Bioshock Infinite a little, and which was certainly done in the last Splinter Cell, is the whole any AI bad guy who is not the you know main antagonist character is like a Guido from Jersey without the accent. They all kind of, hey, what you are, fuck you. Like, they don't have anything, you know, sort of more meaningful to say than I'm gonna fuck you up. Like, I want to hear them say, and like, I gotta go home and feed my kids, so let's get this over with. It would be more interesting. then fuck you.
So out of all of the cliches, specifically in video game dumb, you have chosen to critique henchman dialogue. Am I getting
yes.
the NPC with three dots
the most, right?
Yes, yeah. Because it takes you out of the, because I'm all about the atmosphere of the game, and it totally takes you out of feeling immersed in the game when every single henchman says the same cliche bullshit thing.
You know, I have to say that I actually didn't, you're talking about BioShock Infinite that has that, or?
Yeah, it does a little bit. I mean, they're not henchmen usually, but yeah, I mean, that does a little bit of that, which I know we said we wouldn't talk about it till next week, but
yeah,
yes.
Do you want to hear something interesting about that? Actually, Rhianna Pratchett, who is Terry Pratchett's daughter, who wrote on several games, including Tomb Raider and one of my personal favorites, Heavenly Sword, she has a writing credit in BioShock Infinite, and it turns out that she actually wrote some of the incidental dialogue for AI characters.
I hope that hers was like the two good ones that I heard, because most of it is pretty vacant.
Hey, me and Smush are going to go to the Smush Room. Hey, oh, forget about it.
For mine, I'd probably say I'm a little tired of the angry or irritated reviewer, commentator. There was a time I really enjoyed Yahtzee stuff, but then after the angry video game nerd, annoyed gamer, and countless of the other raving lunatics, I really started craving opinions from real people with actual insights. People like Jeremy Parrish and Jeff Green, you know, people that weren't just these personalities. And to me, these really irritating personalities, they just seem calculated and kind of tiring. They make outrageous claims just to get views, I think. In one example, I used to think annoyed gamer was okay, but then he started ranting senselessly about JRPGs, even saying that some were ruining the industry and people were buying these kind of niche titles or responsible for, you know, like a loss in quality. And, you know, if you compare that to films, that's like saying Scary Movie 5 is ruining the industry. You know, obviously he had no data, no evidence, or any kind of support for this claim. So, you know, it kind of made him sound like an idiot, but with a cute little Welsh accent.
Like that answer.
That's my rant. Ranters.
I'm going to ask you, though, what is your trope inside video games? Because I think that's probably more to the point of the question.
See, well...
But I do like that answer. That was a very good answer, and I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to breed a class of sort of gentleman gamer bloggers who just sort of, you know, sip brandy and smoke out of a wooden pipe and just say, well, I really did quite enjoy Infinite, except for the henchman dialogue. I thought it was a bit hackneyed.
Well, obviously we can't be that group because all we talk about is poop and dick jokes. So, but yeah, that'd
be
good.
Dignified and talk about poop.
How can you sip brandy, smoke a cigar, and keep a straight face as you talk about feces and put it in and tentacle porn?
Oh, everybody boos, old chap.
Yeah, there you go.
This did not have enough tentacle anal for my tastes.
So what you're really saying is that we should all talk as though we have pipes in our mouths, and that would therefore make us seem dignified.
Don't forget monocles. That's not
the way. Yeah, you have to sound like you have a monocle, too.
And then if you get surprised, the monocle has to, like, chink, chink, chink on the ground when you open. Yeah.
Don't forget, you have to breathe on it and then wipe it on your shirt halfway through what you're saying.
So we're going to be the squinty, one-eyed British version of the Jersey Guidos, which we've already poo-pooed.
I think we're just designing villains now.
We need a better class of villain, is that what you're saying? I feel like this is a Heath Ledger reference now.
Gotham deserves a better class of criminal. I'm going to give it to them.
I actually have a point about that for next week, but not today.
Stay tuned.
But yeah, my answer is just like the angry dude bros with a gun stereotype of everything shooting, killing,
like
shit.
Gears of War style.
Yeah, just, I mean, Gears of War, I mean, don't get me wrong, Call of Duty games are okay. You know, the ones I've played are okay, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, the annual releases and, you know, I mean, it's just shooting and killing games really don't do it for me much anymore. I mean, you know, Grand Theft Auto was okay, and it's just, it's kind of old hat. It's like, honestly, I do find myself, you know, the more I see games like that becoming popular and stuff like that, I find myself getting pushed back towards playing some of the older stuff. I mean, I got like Klonoa for the PS1, you know, sitting in the middle of my floor right now. I mean, it's, you know, I just don't like the ultra-violent, super-killing shooter games, because there's just so damned many of them that they aren't really that special or unique anymore.
Right. I mean, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
It's one thing when, you know, like back in like 2001 when Grand Theft Auto 3 came out. I mean, that was fucking incredible. It was like an eye-opening video game equivalent of a religious experience. But now, I mean, you go back and play it after playing, you know, a lot of the popular stuff, and it's kind of like, oh, hey, I played this and insert game title here, and it was 10 times better than this crap. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's
sort of almost like the horror movie industry. You just got to wait for somebody to come along and break the mold again, which, mm-hmm. you know, I think we're about due for that sometime soon.
Yeah. And if, you know, I mean, the last shooter game that I can recall really picking up, I mean, you know, I got Earth Defense Force for a review, which I already played to death on the 360. But the last shooter game I bought was Call of Duty World at War, which I got during Black Friday, and I don't think I've put it in my Xbox more than once for just no more than 5 minutes, just to make sure the disc worked, you know, since I wasn't sure when I'd get to it. And, you know, I miss the days of, you know, traditional platformers being all the rage and... You know, stuff like Super Mario World, and of course, I'm an old school gamer anyway, so I like the older stuff better than the newer stuff most of the time anyways, but, you know, it's, I kind of miss the industry being like that, and, you know, just, of course, I'm not going to say DLC, but I'm going to think it to myself. It's one thing to be able to go back and play Super Mario World, but you won't be able to do that with most of the stuff nowadays. Okay, just take it. I'm done.
You can buy
I'm out, dropping
levels.
The mic.
Now you can buy Luigi's levels.
Oh, God.
Jeremy, to answer your question, in-game, mine's going to be rather small and probably not applicable to most people, but much like Blue said, military shooters that purport to offer verisimilitude, that's supposed to be accurate, and they have the proper weapons, and they have the talk, and they try to have the tactics, but they're just brain dead. They just have, you know, none of the elements of a simulation. And so it's just guys on horses, you know, firing rocket launchers at things. They try to be realistic, but they're just so far over the top that it's comical.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's with the Call of Duty games, it's like everything's a set piece. It's like all the stuff that's supposed to be super amazing, it's like it's not going to get triggered until you move, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
2 seconds ahead. It's like I can just sit here for like, just put the controller down for like 72 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then I walk forward. That's when something's going to happen. You know, it's not surprising at all.
Well, if we're talking about simulations, I really personally I have to give a lot of credit to the Battlefield series, starting with Bad Company, from a sound design perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has some of the most, you know, authentic sounds I've ever heard as far as, you know, firearms and weapon systems are concerned.
And the thing about Bad Company is that it didn't take itself too seriously. It kind of had this Lethal Weapon. And so I don't have a problem with that one. It's the ones that are super serious, mm-hmm. you know, that take it in a different direction. So for Bad Company, if you're, you know, knocking down a building with a single RPG shot, hey, that makes sense in that universe.
Right.
Because it's loopy, it's funny, it's comical, it's almost a parody of other games. But games that are playing it seriously, those are the ones that I take issue with.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say I definitely have to agree. I mean, anytime.
I do miss that game. I you know, Battlefield 3 was, you know, somewhat interesting, but I felt like they didn't, they could have gave me another Bad Company. And I would have been happier with that.
I mean, I would imagine their sales just weren't as impressive as, say, Call of Duty's, and so they decided to go back to the super serious model, you know?
Yeah. That works so well for Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Odd Man Out.
Yeah, third wheel. Wait, talking about Medal of Honor.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think I saw some EA numbers, and didn't Battlefield 3 or 4 whatever do like 3.5 million?
Across all platforms, yeah.
That's not a bad number, but I know Call of Duty probably smoked it in the first 72 hours.
Sure. Yeah. So, should we take it home?
Yes, please.
I nominate you to do the outro.
Who? Me?
Yeah, your name is Sage.
Oh, I didn't hear my name. Kay. So,
Kay.
Yeah.
So means cheese.
If you like what we talk about and you like the stuff that we bring up in our... Wait, can I try that again? I don't have the thing in front of me.
No, we've sort of been winging it the last few weeks.
If you like what we talk about and you want to know more about our opinions and or you want to read our reviews, you should check out techgaming.com. That's where all our stuff gets posted. We also have a Facebook page where we post our new updates and on which you can check us out. We also all have Twitter accounts. You can follow me at Samarage. You can follow Robert at techgaming, with a thingy.
Underscore.
Tech underscore gaming. You can follow Blue at Blue Swim. And you can follow Jeremy.
Don't touch him there.
You can follow Jeremy at... Jeremy, what is yours? I always forget.
It's just my name. At Jeremy underscore Lamont.
Okay. It's the underscores that throw me off. Ryan, you don't have a Twitter account yet. Is that correct?
No. I have not joined the Twitter yet.
Ryan will get one, and then you can follow him. And if you would like to follow our absent member, his name is Sean, and you can follow him at Sean Nola. There are two N's in the middle there. And there's
don't
a lot.
And you can see him in a and you can see him in a straight up pimpin' yo suit.
Totally can.
With
and you
money,
can also,
with dollar bills on the ground.
And you can also follow our phenomenal Phoenix friend, Say. At Psy. Oh yeah, that's right.
Uh-oh.
Sorry,
Psy.
Mispronunciation, but I no offense. And that one is
SayOmgWTF. And a big shout out to our friend of the show, Gons, who created Trivia, which will be showing up on Twitter and on Facebook.
Oh, cool.
Ooh, that'll be cool.
Yes, thank you so much. He really went out of his way and created a whole bunch of really amazing trivia, so check that out.
Wow.
Awesome.
And remember to leave comments for us on iTunes and on the Tech Gaming site, and also let us know if you want us to do video stuff at E3, and let us know what you think of the show or what you want us to do differently. We might not do it, but, you know, it's always good to get feedback. And thanks for listening.
No promises.
We'll just argue with you.
We'll hear you, but we will not do a damn thing. Video game podcast equivalent of talking to a wall.
We are soon to be the Distinguished Gentlemen's Club of video game podcasting.
Everybody,
bringing you all
mustache.
The tentacle porn and poop jokes you can handle.
Rubbing my three-hair beard right now.
Two-stick? What?
What? Tube-stick?
Dual-stick? I'm drinking a milkshake with my pinky out.
Oh, with your pinky out. That's what you said. Okay.
Damn right.
Can I just tell you?
And when he says milkshake, he means whiskey.
Okay.
Unrelated to anything, someone on Twitter just now posted a Dino Riders photo without any prompting from me.
That's disturbing. The synchronicity of the universe is terrifying.
Can you give them a shout out?
Yeah, it's Alan Johnson from over at Activision. He does the PR. He used to work at Telltale.
Oh, wow.
At the Alan Johnson. I don't really know him that well, but he posted a picture of a Dino Rider.
Like I always say, follow the Johnson.
See, we can never go a whole episode without a penis joke. It is literally impossible.